Today is October the 11th, 2011. It is 6:21, and it is an Instruction Personnel Policy Student Services Committee meeting. Tony, would you please call roll, please?
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Casares?
Here.
Mrs. Searles?
Here.
And first item on the agenda, please.
Item 2A, discussion and possible formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding FMD local student activities and social events. Ms. Carrasco and Mr. Fry.
Good evening, Madam Chair, committee members, trustees, Dr. Murphy. We're here before you this evening to present a modification to FMD local policy, FMD local. This was requested by a couple of board members, so we made the changes and we brought them before you for discussion, and we're open to questions at this point.
I don't think I have the changes. Are they in the book?
Yes,
they're in the back.
In the back? Okay. Then I do.
Mr. Fry is here this evening to provide input on behalf of the campus.
Tony, I'm not finding them in the book.
I think they're new
students. There's a loose document.
Okay, good. I have it.
And basically, the policy is in regards to the homecoming activities. And I guess traditionally, the celebrations that take place during homecoming week, the parade, the hall decorating, the bonfire, the dance, and the football game. And the change basically is that it's clarifying, it's adding that each activity listed will be held on a separate day of the week. And that was a sentence that was added, that it would be held on separate days of the week.
But with no specific, because that's what I have, and that's why I'm thinking I didn't get it. Nobody filled, we haven't, no days of the week yet.
You mean specified? Mm-hmm. No, it's not specified.
No, I think the intent was, at least from the conversations that, or the comments that a couple of the board members, was that so that the activities wouldn't be combined on one day, and that they would be held on separate days of the week, but not as restrictive as to saying, okay, this one is on Monday, this one is on Tuesday. It was going to be at the discretion of the campus. And like I said, I know that Mr. Fry has, wanted to share some comments with you all in regards to this. But, you know, we're open to entertain any questions from you all.
And I just wanted to really just make sure that we give some full consideration to some things. Part of why we did this year, which was a lot very similar to last year of having the bonfire and the parade on the same evening, really was twofold. Last year was driven by we had parent teacher conferences. We kind of get, because of where homecoming falls, it's usually in the neighborhood of 6-week exams and parent teacher conferences. And parent teacher conferences kind of push us to one side or the other as far as activities at night. And then also, this year was our 6-week exams, and we were trying to minimize the number of nights that our students were out at night, knowing that we wanted their spirit, but they also needed to participate fully in their 6-week exams the following days. The other thing that I would point out is obviously the JVs and the freshman teams play on Thursday nights, and so when we have the bonfire on Thursday night, those 100 plus kids are never able to attend and participate in the homecoming bonfire. I think the least of the, well, I don't think of myself when I say staff, because I'm not, you know, subject to this. My days are different, but we have a lot of staff that are out when we spread these activities out. Then we have staff that are out 5 nights a week working, especially the sponsors who are putting in a lot of hours into each of these activities, and it's pretty significant. So those are some considerations that I want you to think about. Tell you the truth, this is a great, these are great traditions in Canyatillo. I've been so impressed with how well they are supported and how absolutely, I guess, moved I am every year to see the types of activities and the participation from the students and their community. So I'm just giving you that input as to some reasons why some things, why things look the way they do. You know, there were some problems in the past with ending in Gallegos Park, and that there was some really some activities that weren't healthy things. There's a lot of kind of tackle football, powder puff, and activities that we kind of didn't have control of because of the environment in which it was in. It was kind of handed over to the sheriffs, who we paid to supervise those activities. We don't pay them for the parade, but the other activities. And so that was a concern when we used to have the post parade party, if you will, at Gallegos, which we haven't really had since. Really, since the 6 years that I've been there's been a little bit, but not the vendors and the cookouts and those things. When I was assistant principal, it wasn't in place, and then when I became principal, it wasn't there as well. So those are the things that I just make sure you understand fully as you look at this.
Rachel. Ms. Lori?
Well, I think I take in everything Mr. Fry says, understand and realize, you know, those are issues. But I think that what I heard was that we as a board didn't want to put specific days on it, and that it would be, you know, if you don't want to have the bonfire and the parade on the same day, understand, or you do want to have them on the same day. You know, that could be understandable, and we can write that into the same day. But is that, am I correct that was pretty much the board's desire that we go back? At one time, this policy was written with days. I wrote it many, many years ago. And I know that everybody seemed kind of shocked that, you mean our policy doesn't say that anymore? It's specific days. Mm-hmm. So with that said, Ms. Gonzalez, do we have thoughts on what the days we want to have them on?
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
Jim, you had mentioned to me two other points about staff tension on the week, a number of nights worked, and then also the issue of football boys.
Yeah, and it really was the Thursday night when we have the bonfire, football players, JV and Frosh, mm-hmm. can never participate.
Interesting.
And doing, and we know homecoming week is about all the kids, but we also know that it culminates with a football game on Friday night. It is a football week, and then we really the brunt of a lot of this falls on our student council and our senior class sponsor. They do the bonfire every year, and then they're decorating floats, and then they're responsible for a hallway. But it is pretty much. I saw my student council person on Monday after, and she said, "Oh my gosh, I felt like I just planned a wedding, had a wedding, and I'm back here to work on Monday." And she said, "I'm exhausted," and that was going into the new 6 weeks of parent teacher conference week. So it is something that is really pretty tough on them, but they do it because it's the kids love it.
Madam Chair, does that position come with a stipend?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's not like it's a volunteer position.
Sure.
They knew what they were getting into when they took it. Yeah.
Pretty good. I don't think anybody ever fully knows, but.
No, yeah. But they knew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. They didn't want it, somebody else be happy to pick it up. With that said, obviously the football game is going to be Friday night. That mm-hmm. seems to be a no-brainer.
And the dance has been.
Saturday
night. Decorating goes on Tuesday.
Well, see, here's the thing. Let me tell you what I know, what I've seen, because it's looked. The parade was Wednesday, bonfire Thursday, game Friday, dance on Saturday, and hall decorating was before the bonfire on Thursday. We did hall decorating on Monday because we really wanted the decorations to stay up all week and be really paint the picture for homecoming week. So we did that on Monday.
Okay.
Bonfire parade on Wednesday. Game on Friday and dance on Saturday this year.
Ms. Garcetes?
Mr. Fry, so I'm understanding you to say that the kids are allowed all week to decorate the halls?
They decorate on Monday. We leave them up all week. They judge them right after they decorate on Monday night, and then we judge them.
So they just have one day to decorate them, and that's it? Okay. That's what I wanted to know, because, I mean, I know in the past they used to have all week and then judge them Friday morning, but that was a long time ago, a real long time ago.
It wasn't so long.
It was a really long time ago.
Okay. So Monday's hall decorating day?
Sure.
Have you had any problems with that? I mean, as far as I hear you saying that you like them up all week so the kids can enjoy, are they destroying them? Are they respecting
not.
That?
Okay. All good.
I like to hear that.
We had some breakdowns in how it is to be done. We had some rule violations on the use of materials, painting on certain areas, taping mm-hmm. certain ways, which we need to shore up for next year. But the participation was outstanding, and things were left all week and unharmed. I mean, mm-hmm. it was.
I have a question. In regards to the homecoming week, who? I know it has to do with UAL, but who picks the homecoming week?
Well, really, it's determined by our football schedule, which Coach Brooks sits down and he gets the schedule. The schedule's pretty much dictated to us by the deck, the 2-4A deck and the league that we're in. And then we look at games. We look at what other activities are going on campus. We try and be cognizant of parent-teacher conferences in 6 weeks. But certain things just push it one way or the other. And so, as you know, this year, we had three games. We could have gone the game we did, or this game, or you push clear into November to a Riverside game. So we also try and get it with them. There's a home volleyball game because we get a lot of support for our girls that night, too. So he works with the volleyball coach to kind of coordinate that.
What other sports? You mentioned football on Thursday. What other sports are scheduled on Thursday besides JV?
That's it.
That's it?
Well, I don't want to say that's it. Yeah, that's it. That's it. We have tennis on Friday, but that's, you know, you didn't hear that. It's usually away on that week. So
then hall decorating Monday, parade / bonfire Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
That's
fine. So you'd want those two activities on the same day?
Pardon?
You want those two activities?
Well, it sounds like Mr. Fry has got a really good, you know, point in having that happen that way. And I see everybody doing a ball. Mm-hmm. Don't you?
Has it been working out for you that way?
Absolutely. And you know what? The kids, the participation in both has been better in the last 2 years. Last year we kind of got forced to do it because of parent-teacher conferences. And the participation at both ends was good. And then we literally get to the park, and the kids play for a couple minutes, and they get in their cars, and they carpool, and they all go right over there. We didn't have any problems. The sheriff said, well, these are the best 2 years of the end of the parade that we've ever had. And it was because the kids really want to get over it and run around the fire and celebrate mm-hmm. over there. So from that standpoint, too, it was the best. Best participated and cleanest.
Madam Chair. I can ask a question. Does that also facilitate things for the officers since they go from one location to the other?
It is. Some are volunteers and some are paid. Mm-hmm. So
the ones that volunteered for the parade, did they go ahead and volunteer for the bonfire? No.
We spent thousands of dollars that week with the sheriffs. That we kind of give them their Christmas cash on our week. But
it would be nice if they would volunteer.
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm thankful that they shut down the roads for us for that.
Yeah.
You know, and this year we could have probably shut down the entire town with as many constables, sheriffs, and we had.
It's really wonderful.
That was part of the parade.
Yeah.
I this year I was expecting the parade on Wednesday and Thursday, the bonfire. And many people were expecting the same. Personally, I would prefer the same thing.
Split, have Thursday. But JV game, and I do understand what he says, that I have a question, Mr. Fry, when they get to the, I don't go to the bonfire. When they get to the bonfire, do we have our student organizations having any fundraisers there?
No.
Not. We had our cheerleaders were selling some water, but really
there are a bunch of food trucks and snow cone people that line the street.
It's not activity.
It's not. It really isn't. Probably could be. It's kind of dark, so there's only certain spots they could probably do it. But nobody has.
That is true. That's a good point. We up the road going to Ernesto's office. We probably could put some stuff up there. That's a very good point.
It's just a good opportunity to raise money for the kids. People are starving.
They
want a hot dog. It would be good for a lot of our booster clubs and to take advantage of that.
That's our property too, mm-hmm. so.
Mm-hmm. Which I would be happy to write, that student organizations within this policy are encouraged to have fundraisers
during
before,
during and after.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that they've got policy that they are encouraged to do this. Mm-hmm. Because I promise you, every one of us got to Gallegos Park and said, I'm hungry. Nice to have something to eat. I'm hungry. And you knew everybody else was thinking the same thing. You could sell more dollar hot dogs. We could hire some more teachers, really, with what you could make.
I'd rather have that at the bonfire site.
Exactly. But
I'll agree to that.
We're doing it in, encouraging these kids. Come on, you have to sell the chocolate bar to your neighbors. Mm-hmm. These people really want to buy a hot dog from you or a pickle or some mm-hmm. popcorn.
I'll agree to that.
And does that do anything for the Thursday, Wednesday thing, Ms. Gonzalez?
I'm putting the burden on the administrator now. He's going to have more work to coordinate activities for the bonfire.
You mean as far as fundraisers?
Well, you have to coordinate.
You tell them they're going to be able to make money. I don't have to do much.
That's the thing. Yeah.
We'll probably have to rent a few more lights. We rent those lights to make sure that it's that we're spreading, it's safe and there's not those dark hideout spots. So we can do that. No problem.
I'll agree. Mm-hmm.
You could go for the Wednesday.
Okay.
So that's hall decorate Monday. Parade/bonfire Wednesday, game Friday, dance Saturday, and student organizations are encouraged by the board to have fundraisers mm-hmm. before, during, and after.
So do we, what I would say is we're probably looking at, we want to put it, this year, we started getting over there, leaving to go to the bonfire at about 7. We lit the match at about 7:30. And we're talking by about, we hire the sheriffs till 10. And about 9 o'clock, we start saying, okay, it's 9 o'clock, and and the sheriffs start pushing kids. So I don't know if you want to put some guidance on hours of the bonfire.
I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. You're a smart man.
Okay, I'm just. I don't want to.
Just turn that
that's your job.
I have a question. I've been the last 2 years to the bonfire, but every time I've gotten there, it's already in place. Okay. You have a ceremony or light? What do you do? Uh-huh.
We have the senior class president. I speak, the senior class president speaks, the band plays, and then the senior class goes and does their little run around the thing and they torch it.
Who torches it?
West Valley Fire Department lights it.
Missy Dowd, I can tell you how to torch a bonfire. With axe hand, flaming axe handles, right? Missy Dowd, at A&M.
Welcome to put her in the fire.
Madam Chair, I think...
Put in the policy that we're going to use flaming axe handles to light.
That the fundraising would be specific and exclusive only to student organizations, no outside people on our property.
Right, and that's what I was saying. If you think about that property, those food trucks line up on the street in front of BCE.
Yeah.
But the road that leads into our facilities and operations headquarters is a nicely paved, wide road that's out of the way. And they could line that. Now we would have to be careful for fire code because there's firemen there, so we couldn't probably block the entire street.
Oh, yeah.
But they could be on the, and it's a wide avenue there. They could line on the side, I'm sure.
But however they get there is fine.
Sure.
They set up the
it's on our property. That's the key.
Yeah. But no outsiders.
No outsiders.
Yeah.
We don't.
But also the fire shield.
I foresee a problem with the outsiders getting inside there. We're not supposed guys to do a pretty good job.
Yes.
But that would be in policy specifically, so nobody could come back and go, oh, you know, well, we're going to have Rudy's come and they're going to set up the barbecue truck. And then so during Mr. Gill gets to sell nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That we want it specific to our children. And then game is Friday, dance is Saturday. And is there any talk maybe about, like, you know, I had a parent call about how the girls were chosen for homecoming, how the boys were chosen for homecoming, how the father and the, who was going to walk the girls. I had all kinds of calls this year. Is there any? Did anybody else
get? Yes. Did you change it this year?
As far as
was there like a process?
As far as
The selection?
The selection has been the same as it was as long as we've tightened it up. Dr. Padilla and I, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, there was a situation where a student was going around and collecting their own votes and basically politicking. And so what we've done is we've kept the same process, but what we do is put some expectations around all of them that want to run have to be at a certain meeting. All of them have to live by certain guidelines. We've cut out a lot of the free, kids were giving away the farm to try and get votes. I mean, kids were bringing in pizzas and giving away pizzas and cotton candy and snow cones. And we said, no. People are voting for you, not for what you're paying them with. So we've eliminated those things. We have made sure that we have two adults that are taking the votes. We've tried to put in every safeguard that we can to make sure that that the process is followed. The fact is that it's a pretty important thing to a lot of students, and there's always hurt feelings, and people will always say, well, this wasn't done, or this thing happened, I'll tell you this year, and Monica can speak too, but the senior class, we had really outstanding kids, and the fact of the matter was we had outstanding kids who kind of were in the same group, and they split each other's votes, and that hurt them when somebody else won that wasn't in that group of those kids. So I would say that it's a pretty equitable, it's not discriminatory in who gets to run. It's not discriminatory in how the votes are. There's no bribing. And then we count them and recount the votes. So as anywhere I've been for homecoming, I think it's probably the most, the tightest procedures that I've ever seen. And it's to protect against being, we can defend everything that we've done from point A to point Z. So, and I...
Mr. Fry, I do have a question regarding that. How far back has it been since that they had to pick up an application and ask to run? Because homecoming in the old days, used to be students nominated people. And if you want to go back even further, it used to be football team nominated people. So I understand where you're going with that. Like, so, you know, like Joe's girlfriend is going to get it for sure because they all play football. I get that. But I think sometimes it's been a little bit less centered around students and more centered around faculty and who faculty picks. Or how does the selection process work, I guess, what I'm asking.
Some of the things that have been put in place have been because of, just like policies that we have here, because there's been a problem. And, you know, some of the screening criteria as far as application, we have seen, we had a homecoming king that won that was a fifth-year senior 1 year. And it was like, well, wait a second, how did that get through? You know, and so really what we've tried to do is put safeguards in place that say, do you want to do this? Because it's a big deal, and it takes a lot of time. You have to commit to the parade. You have to commit that you're going to follow our rules and do it the way we are asking you to do it. Yes, we want you to have fun, but we don't want you to stomp on somebody else or hurt. So the, you know, the football stuff is way years back.
Yes, way years back.
And then there is the kind of, it is the nomination is through kids saying, hey, you know, this person needs to run. And then the person agreeing to saying, yeah, I'll be nominated. I will run. I want to run. And the boys are a lot harder to get to do that than the girls, actually. But
yeah, I was a little disappointed that there was a senior representative not there. And I believe freshman as well. There was no freshman male representation. I was a little bit disheartened by that. I think that all levels should be represented. And
I agree.
I mean, I know that, so I just, that's why my question is, okay, what does this application consist of? And I mean, it's not college, it's high school. So you would think that kids would want to take more initiative and get involved. And maybe, is it too tedious? What, why?
It's just basically a few things. It's about their character, their commitment to the school, and the pride in the school, and that's, in a nutshell, that's basically what it is.
So you think kids just rather not mess with it?
I think the kids that wouldn't want to mess with that don't want to mess with it in its entirety.
You know? Okay.
I mean, I was nominated when I was a senior. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but
you notice how I drew that in?
But I declined it. I don't want to do it. I didn't. I thought it was too cool for it. You know. So okay. There's that. And so I understand that because, you know, it's one of those things. I'm jealous.
So what I'm hearing is not all grades are represented then? Your homecoming court is not represented?
Well, we had one position, the freshman prince. We tried to dig him up, tried to get nominees, and no freshman prince.
You need to fill the position with yourself. Yeah. Since you didn't take it when you were in high school, there's an opening, you fit it. It'll be you.
And then there's the risk, you know, and there's the risk that we push somebody into a position, especially with the seniors when they're competing for king and duke and earl, whatever. And we push somebody into that position, and then they have to justify to the others that they followed the rules and they got in on time and they accepted the nomination and we forced another person. So it is a delicate thing that I've come to really realize that every year we meet as a staff and we go over it to make sure that we button things down tight because number one, I don't want to hurt anyone's hurt feelings, and number two, we want to be able to defend from beginning to end how we did things and how they were done. We change things a little bit, but we learn from hurt feelings, really, and things to make it better. So,
Madam Chair, one other question: what about the walking person, whoever walks?
You're talking at halftime, on the field.
I can only guess the same person who called me called you. What was that?
I talked to that person as well.
Uh huh.
I've done some talking. In the last 10 years, the parents have been escorting their child onto the field. And what I've been told prior is that it was just an ex. An ex was asked and to be there. Well, 90% of the time when our kids have the parents It's an X. Mm-hmm. And
guilty.
You know, and my thing when I was talking with this person was I said, she said, well, we just want to honor the exes. And I said, well, the whole homecoming week is about coming home and we have an outstanding ex and all that. This moment really is about the now. It's about these kids and it's their moment. And, you know, I had an instance where a little girl's dad, who she hadn't seen in years, showed up on the night and asked, can I walk with you?
And he wasn't an ex and you said no?
He wasn't an ex. No, I said, absolutely, give me your name, I'm going to announce it. And I remember, it's a big night for those kids right then. And just to say, well, I'm sorry, your parent can't be with you, you've got to get an ex. I didn't feel comfortable with that. But what I committed is we need to look at a way that we can involve exes. If it wouldn't have been the new turf, I would have probably said, well, let's bring the exes down and parade them around the outside of the field and have everybody stand holding hands. That's if it came to you, exes in the stadium. Somebody said, you're crazy, there's going to be 5,000.
Well, yeah.
But I didn't know what that would look like. But I think that with a little more time, that's something that we could probably do, is to bring all the exes down and have them form a circle around
there's
it or something.
There's a lot of them.
That's going to take a lot of time.
I mean,
well, we have 28 minutes, and the band plays for 10. So if we, even if they're still formed, well, we start the processional. But that's how it's been for 10 years. I know how it was said before. I've learned that.
And you're comfortable not having a policy on that? Just
I would like to not have to answer that phone call every year to explain that we're doing it this way because it's really good for these kids.
Yeah, and I also, and I totally in. Jim is being polite here. He was very adamant on the phone with me that he wants to make sure those parents have every opportunity to walk their children. I know having three daughters, if my daughter wants something like that, and they said, well, you can't walk your daughter because you didn't go to this high school, I would be offended.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And I really appreciate what Jim does with it. And if we want to put it in policy, I also, and I was going to bring this up, and I'll bring it up now, I think that we need to write a policy that addresses our school colors. I really do, because every year, three or four people, well, it needs updated.
Because what we currently have is not what's in
place. I really think we need to address it, so it ends the debate and ends the argument.
I wasn't aware that there was parents that were concerned about that. I will say, as a former graduate, my parents, actually not my mother, but my father escorted me, and it was special, and we got to escort our daughter this year, and it's a big deal. I mean, for that child and that moment, and for the parents, it is a big deal.
It's at that point right then, it's not about the past, it's about right now.
Yeah.
And it's about these kids' moment and creating the memory that will bring them back year after year after year to celebrate, and I think that's important.
Yeah.
If I have to buy that dress, I should get to walk.
I agree.
And, I mean, but
you only got one more.
You
one
got
more
two
dance.
Arms. I mean, you know, if people get really fussy, can't, you know.
Well, I think that maybe we look at a creative way and say that
do something else with the X's.
We will honor the X's at halftime in some manner. And
yeah,
we can do that.
Maybe we should try to look at working that in and honoring the
exes. If I had more time, I could have the junior ROTCs guide these people. We could they could be part of the presentation where we end up, you know, they're in the CHS and that kind of neat deal with the band, and then we march through, and then the last thing we do is play the fight song. If they could be down there, you know, in some manner around the track when we play the fight song, I think it would give you goosebumps.
Madam Chair, could we then add in this that X's will be honored at halftime? And in so doing, maybe you close the loophole. You know, they're going to get honored. The principal can figure out what it'll be.
That's good. Student council.
Just leave it kind of bland like that, but say something.
Uh-huh.
So if 15 years from now, it might only be they stand and wait, but they're honored in some manner.
Honored.
I'm trying to remember if they did do anything like that. I heard them announce several classes that were doing reunions, but I don't think they said all the X's.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
They did mention two classes.
Yeah, I did hear the two classes, yeah.
But that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Fry, what about the issue of
and I don't know if it's an issue for, if it was an issue that was brought to your attention, that they didn't get notified or at the last minute saying like you were part of the homecoming
senior class.
No. Homecoming court, you have to go get your own car. But
that was my fault.
Yes, big fault.
Yeah, I could complain about that too.
That was my fault. I've heard it, and we've already put stuff in place for next year.
You have something in place already?
Well, is it going to be that somebody on the student council is responsible for getting the cars, or because since you don't know, since you would make everybody wait till Monday afternoon?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we're not going to make wait till Monday afternoon. We're going to wait. We're going to do it Friday. Senior class, we don't announce the winners for those of you who don't know until homecoming halftime. But the finalists, we'll let them know Friday, and we need the class collectively is responsible for assisting with making sure that their royalty have cars.
That's how turning the form,
not just good. The princess.
Yeah.
And that was something that I dropped the ball and it won't happen again.
Good. Okay. Very good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Did you make a note of everything then?
Yes. Okay. I'm gonna recap really quick.
Okay.
Okay, so we're gonna designate days on the homecoming activities. The hall decorating will be on Monday. The parade and bonfire will be on Wednesday. The football game on Friday and the dance on Saturday. Also, we will include verbiage on that the student organizations are encouraged to fundraise before, during, and after at the bonfire site, and specifically, exclusively to CISD students. And then also, maybe as an activity added for the game, will be honoring the exes in some way during halftime. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I will craft this policy and provide it for you all to read.
Perfect. Any other things, Mr. Fern? That we?
No, thank you. I appreciate your support. And I love the truck you guys were all in.
You'll be back.
Thank you, Mrs. Service.
And I'll bring the school color thing next month.
Okay, thank you.
And we do have policy, so please, if you will, bring the old policy.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carrasco.
Thank you, Ms. Carrasco.
Thank you, Ms. Carrasco.
And next agenda item, please.
Mrs. Adams, is there a recommendation?
Oh, yes. Yes, please. Committee agrees to recommend it to the board. Please.
Thank you. So we'll bring it for a first reading on the 19th?
Please.
Thank you. Is there any discussion of that regarding day of the week that you wanted to bring up? I know that I've been hearing chatter about that.
What item? Are we talking about B?
Yes.
Item B, discussion of possible formulation of recommendations.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, that's my agenda.
So we're on that item now?
Yes. Okay. So BE local, basically during the meeting time, the recommendation from the board was that the regular meetings shall be held not on the second Tuesday of the month, but on the third Wednesday of each month. And that's the change on, that's the only change there on this policy.
Okay. May I start now? Ms. Lori, Ms. Rachel? Okay. I know that we had brought it before the board originally and the full board had agreed, and this was supposed to be the first reading. Is it the first reading or no?
We brought it to committee and then for possible first reading on the 19th.
Okay. But now, as a committee, I want to make a change. All right. There has been some change in, I have to attend a meeting at my workplace. And I forgot that it's on the third Wednesday of the month. And I want to know what, if my committee agrees to a change, either a Tuesday or a Thursday. And I want to see what my committee thinks.
I have no problem with either day.
Sure.
Tuesday.
Put it back on Tuesday. It's fine. Was administration okay with the Tuesday?
The administration is fine with any day but Thursday.
Yes.
Tuesday. Okay. Tuesday. So it will be the third Tuesday.
That's Tuesday. That will work for us.
Does it, Ms. Any member here present, my committee, has a problem? Has any objection?
No, it's fine.
Dr. Murphy, so Tuesday will be okay?
That's totally fine.
Okay.
Ms. Aguirre is?
Ms. Aguirre.
It still works. The third week works.
Oh, we want it on a Thursday then.
The third week.
Mr. Joyner.
I'll go ahead and make that change for Tuesday.
Okay, the committee recommends then on the third Tuesday of the month.
So you'll make that change and then the first reading will still be
on the 19th.
But
yes.
We do need to hold the first meeting on the 19th.
Yes.
So this next week you're going to have to make a decision.
Yes, sir. Yes.
But by policy, the board president can make the meeting anytime he wants to make it.
That's true. I apologize. It's just already scheduled for for this
which
point.
Is okay.
And I don't have a problem with that, so I'll manage.
It's and we're going to leave it on the 19th for this month.
Yes, I'll manage. So the committee recommends... makes the recommendation to the full board.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is C, discussion of possible formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding EIA local academic achievement grading progress reports to parents. Ms. Fierro.
For information only, it's not to take to the board for approval. We're still in the process of working with the other districts in the city, but this is sort of the initial decisions made by the committee, made up of the principals and then taken again, will be taken also to teachers. November 15th, we're meeting with administrators in the other districts because they're really looking at different things, but the consensus is that we want to be pretty consistent with the districts so that students don't district shop for where they can get the best deal for the ELC. So this is a starting point for kind of TO, and this is what I'll bring to the table on November 15th when we talk about it. There are still some things that haven't been addressed by the state or haven't been decided by the state. And one of those is how it's going to impact dual credit courses, the EOC assessment. And also the state is considering having PSAT, SAT, and ACT scores replace EOCs. And that hasn't been decided yet by the state. So, it's already been changed once, and some districts have already had to go back to change their policies. So we're moving forward, but we're not rushing forward, and we're still working together as a city, as a community. But I just wanted to let you know where we were in the process. The TASB came back, and I don't know if you think it up yellow?
No.
Okay. There were parts of the policy that they're recommending that we move to our handbook, regarding the grading. There's one of the grading guidelines should be in the handbook and not necessarily in the policy. It's a recommendation. It's not something they're requiring us, but it's a recommendation that they're saying that.
Madam Chair, I would like that this be kept in policy.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it can go in the handbook as well, but that not be taken out of policy.
The part that they were talking about was recording failing grades.
Oh, I thought.
No, not the ELC, that has to be in.
No, I'm thinking of the grades and the grading scale. Is that
the 15? Oh yeah, they're recommending that go, that this the grading scale go. But we can keep it in.
Yeah,
that was just a recommendation that was kind of long, but if you all feel that, we should keep it in.
And as I look at this, I can see where, if I look really hard, where you've got that marked, but it is not. This is what we're looking at.
Right.
Yeah. So something needs to be, if you look really, really hard, you can kind of see some little gray back here. But Dr. Murphy, the board needs better than this so we can see what's been. It just looks like everything's business as usual. We see how she's got it in yellow?
Yeah.
That we don't get the, actually it's copies, but I'm going to, I mean, like right now you have the colors, the yellow changes there,
the
but our copies are like not picking up the changes.
So we can't, we couldn't tell what.
Yeah, the only thing that looked like change, there's some bold print, page 204,
I didn't.
With a black line and some bold print, and that, to me, was the only thing we were going to take issue with. Is that how y'all saw it, too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I apologize.
Uh-huh. And this is good. The bold print with the line is a good way.
Good.
Yeah, it's a very good indicator.
That's an addition? Is that what that is?
No, it's something that CASB is recommending that we take out of the policy and put in the handbook.
Oh, right. So it's two different things?
The one,
the yellow is one thing and the bold is another?
Yes, the blue bold for the end of course is, that's new. That would be for the end of course.
And the yellow is?
Is something that, it's part of what we're going to keep, but CASB's recommending is making our policy a little bit longer and that we put it in the handbook for grading guidelines. That it's not necessary to have in policy.
You see, we need an explanation because there's no even there.
So all this from end of course to grading.
That's, I'm sorry, I didn't put that in the middle.
That was my fault. That's my fault. It was sent to me in color when I copied it. Usually it would shade, at least be shaded, and you could see it, but the copier was so good it didn't shade it.
So the one from end of course down to grading, that's new? You're saying that's being added, okay.
That's brand spanking new.
And that's what we're going slowly with, not rushing to do.
We're moving forward, but
new. Yeah. Okay. All this is new.
So if we could maybe see what you've got in highlights.
Sure.
It would.
Go send that to you.
Yeah, be helpful. And with, you know, the rationale, what it is, why it is.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We can put that in the next one.
And with that said, the part about our grading scale, I would say, must stay in our policy. Does the rest, Monica and Leslie, can you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it should stay there.
Ms. Pam, on page 6, it also says under after grading, it says also CEKB for further information regarding EOC assessments.
Yes, and that's also dealing with our ELL students and our special education students and testing there, that there also needs to be an assessment.
And is there more changes to that policy too?
No.
I think it is, though.
Not, I'll have to look.
I haven't even looked at that policy. My request was going to be, and I don't even know if I'm asking the right question, but can we look at that policy?
Yes,
when
I'll put that. Because if you're right, if it has EOC, it's something new.
Yeah, we know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So we see the whole comprehensive.
Yes, okay. We'll do that next.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Rachel, any questions?
I can put that in the next Friday packet, all of the both.
Please. Ms. Lori?
I don't see how we can do anything for
I know.
But it was for information only. It's not, this is not for any kind of action. It was just to let you know where we were with the 15% part.
Will it even be for action next Wednesday? No.
No, this was for information.
Okay, just
it was just to let you know where we are in the process, which is
it does.
Everything depends on the decision that.
Well, why don't you plan on bringing it back next month? Is that not right?
Sure.
It does say discussion and possible formulation.
Yeah, it does. It's we're discussion and possibly formulating a recommendation to the board.
My recommendation would be no recommendation at this point, bring it back in a month.
Okay.
And when we bring it back in color and with the changes that we've got.
And you're going to have more changes by then. And probably you're going to have more information then too, no?
Yeah, in a month, probably. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're not going to take any action on this agenda item. until the October the 19th or
November
committee meeting. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Vieira.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Next agenda item, please.
Is that it for Ms. Vieira?
One
more.
The class size waiver.
Can we, through the chair, can we go to F? Ms. Fierro's not feeling really well.
Yes.
If we can get through F so she can get out here and appreciate
yes.
it. Ms. Fierro, and class size waiver, please. Is Ms. Brigham joining you?
I think she was possibly going to.
Please, Diane.
Okay, actually there we have a little change in this one because since we submitted the original waiver, we had a change. So I'm gonna, can I give you the new one?
Doing class size, please. Ms. Brigham, come up.
Childress is we have two classes, a first grade and a second grade class of 23. And we have at Conteo Elementary a kindergarten class also of 23.
And through the chair, FYI, this is much less than last year. I think last year we had five or six. This year we only have these two or three.
I have a question. Can you provide us enrollment counts for, that's exactly what I want. That is exactly what I want. On the Friday packet?
Absolutely.
Or do you just have one copy?
Yes, I could run them
off. I want to know what our enrollment looks like. We haven't been seeing any of those reports.
What I have right in front of me, and because I can do it however you want, I have, this is my section of my course, what it is, it's by individual teacher at the elementary, and then I could just put a total at the bottom for you, or then I can just do an enrollment, which would just give you by grade level, and then it, but this is a little more detailed, and then I could just put a total at the bottom for you, and then exactly what it is. And then at, now at the secondary, like at Aldenethy Middle School, it's 10 pages. Did you want it like that? For the secondary schools also, or did you want it by grade level? Because I could do it either way.
By course, probably.
Because this is what, right now I have it by, but this is by description, by course, by teacher.
By teacher.
Yes. I want it by teacher.
Yeah.
That would be.
Is that way we can see the balance?
Yes, I want it by teacher. Uh-huh. Do you want it by teacher? I'd rather have it by teacher. Mm-hmm.
Yes. In the high school.
Yes.
And then I could do it, and then I could save paper if I did it back to back.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah,
that's fine. It's fine.
On the Friday packet. That'd be fine? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ms. Cáceres.
Ms. Fierro, is there a reason why Cante Elementary doesn't have their accountability rating check, or the reason? It's not marked off.
Yeah,
no. Okay. I apologize. It's because actually we had updated it, and I just, it will be acceptable.
Oh, okay.
It's unacceptable.
And are they going to have the same financial hardship as?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering. Okay, thank
we
you.
We had just, what it was is we did this last week, and everything had changed, believe it or not. And
okay.
We were looking at the numbers today. And
we want to make sure, because once we make the waiver, that's it. And actually.
You mean once you submit a waiver, you can't submit another one?
Until next semester.
Right.
Until
really?
Next semester.
Next
semester. Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Maybe I'm just dull, but I'm reading from the book. Can y'all have this to look at? No? I'm going to read it to you to help you with it. It says, attached, please find the 2011-2012 request for maximum class size exception. The exception will allow the district to have two first grade classes at Bill Childress. So they're going to have 23 each.
And it's changed. If you notice, it's at second grade and the third grade. Now the enrollment has changed since then. So we
okay, so maybe that's what I'm... Yes. And two classes at Canyon-Teo Elementary.
Now one it's only kindergarten. One at kinder. Now it's only one at kinder.
And one third grade class. So this sort of just ran a couple of thoughts in together. This is not what's really happening.
Not anymore.
Okay. So what's really happening is...
Is one second grade, one third grade at Bill Childress, and one kinder at Canyon-Teo now. Because of the...
So one second...
We ran the numbers today.
One third...
And actually, things are changing all the time. What if the numbers right, were so, to change again? Yeah.
Right, and what's really, if you'll notice, is we're really trying to stay true to the dual language program. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it difficult sometimes when those numbers run over, we suddenly become imbalanced, mm-hmm. and then teachers are asking, well, what's happening to our dual language program? So that's kind of what we're trying to keep balanced.
So Childress will have two waivers. They will have two classrooms.
A second and a third grade.
With 23 children each.
And CE will have one kinder.
And CE gets one kinder with how many children?
23.
How do teachers feel about it?
Oh, I haven't talked to the teachers anymore.
I personally have done walkthroughs at both schools in the last 3 days, mm-hmm. last three school days. I can tell you I was very impressed, especially at Bill Childress. Mm-hmm. The morale is high. The kids are on task. I think I've done walkthroughs now on every campus except Garcia. And Bill Childress stands out as one of the top schools in the district right now, in my opinion. Canyon-Teo Elementary, what grade is it?
Kinder.
I did not walk through kinder at Canyon-Teo Elementary, but I did walk through those grades in question at Bill Childress, and they're fine. Absolutely.
I had a meeting with the librarians today, and I was talking with Garcia, librarian, and Davenport, all of them. But Garcia and Jose Damian, I mean, I know we've been, I think there was six teachers or seven teachers between them that we had put in the past, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of weeks. So, I mean, we've been hustling. And so they were just saying to me, Annette, we need more of this, more of this. And I'm like, okay, give me a moment. So, but they were very upbeat, and, you know, just making sure we had, now we have to get the other end of the spectrum, getting everything that they need in the classrooms. So I think it's just busy, but I didn't feel any, you know, shroud or anything.
Okay.
It was more like just getting all the what they needed now in the classrooms. Now that we have the teacher in the classroom and setting up the, you know, instructional supplies, making sure I get in there and, you know, get the computers up and mm-hmm. running, make sure, you know, I told them about the library books, we had discussions on the library books, we had, you know, that's what we were discussing today.
Do we have, on this particular kinder section, do we have an instructional aid there?
Are you trying to see?
Yes.
We did when it was at 29. I do not know if that person is still there. I would have to check that for you and get back to you on the writing packet. I do not recall.
No, they do not.
No, the same. Do not.
I'm trying another question.
Yes,
I'm reading your TEA request, and about the middle of the page it says, this request must be submitted to TEA
right.
no later than October 3rd. It's obviously way past that.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, yes, and what happened is they had submitted it. They had actually posted it. You know, I was calling all September because it had the old one. And they finally submitted it, like, just a couple of days before that date. So I called them. I said, you know, we don't have a board meeting until today. And so, you know, what do we do? And mm-hmm. they said, you know what, don't worry about it. Just submit it, fax it, that matter the next day, and you'll be fine. TA swamped. They're understaffed right now. Mm-hmm. They're getting things, you know, up with really not giving districts enough time. They were not surprised by the phone call and the request at all, but we would have had to have called a special board meeting to have that. So they were totally okay with today. But yes, I was alarmed by that too when it came up.
And before you send this away, you're obviously going to fill it in?
Yes. I can do that right now. Yes, it'll be filled in that county TO is acceptable. And that the financial hardship is a drop, it's a drop down.
And the amounts will stay the same. Two sections at Bill Childress, one at the elementary, total of three, no more than 23 kids in the classroom.
Well, I know that last year they really allowed to go up to about 24. We don't want it to go past that.
And we're still within the time frame, right?
Yes.
Okay.
They realize that they did not give districts enough time.
I think that I know when I was in Tennessee, they posted it because I emailed Pam and said it's online. Okay. Because I was checking when I was there.
I was checking.
And it didn't come up until the board meeting, like the night of the week. It was right the day before the board meeting, I think about the 13th, 14th or something like that, it came online. So
it also has page 1 of 2.
What does page 2 consist
of? Okay. I wondered about that.
Yeah. Except we had 5 blank pages.
Okay.
I'll also just point out that this is a luxury and a specific response from our TRE. If we would not have been able to pass our TRE, this list would have been much longer.
It would have been it would have been 9 longer at least, because those are what the board gave us. It was those at least 9 to 12 FTEs that you guys gave us for the instructional.
Yeah, but we've hired other positions instead of teachers.
So I know we had 9, I believe, because I know we had 6 today when we talked to the staff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so does the committee agree?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I will put this in the budget packet.
Okay.
And I will do it with all the secondary campuses also.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, it's Tony. The committee agrees to recommend this maximum class size exception.
Did you take it October 19th?
Class size waiver. To the full board for approval. Going back to agenda item 2D.
Thank you. And Ms. Fiera, you're dismissed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item D, discussion of administrative regulations, CDC, discretionary grant writing, submission approval. Mrs. Aguilar and Ms. Urca.
Ms. Zuniga is not here, but I will send you some copy. You have the regulation, CDC, and a copy of the exhibit. Basically, the regulation was updated on July 18th of this current school year, and although the actual content of the regulation didn't change much, the actual form did to have any grant proposals presented to approval. And effective July 18th, this week, once it was approved.
Okay. I ask you to put this on as an agenda item because, and I noticed here that on July 18th it was, I think, revised.
Yes.
And I'm not sure, and I don't recall if there was a signature there.
The form, the form prior to this revision was updated on February 4th, 2009. Mm-hmm. And that one did not require the board to review or approve prior to submitting the grant.
It did not require?
That's correct. And online, I just verified this form has actually not been updated on the web. The old form is still existing.
It is still on the
web? Yes. Okay.
So the only thing that was updated on this one was what? The.
We asked whether matching funds are required of the grant. We also asked if there's a match, what percentage.
Mm-hmm.
We do indicate the funding source, the proposed grant, and the signature of the CISD Board of Trustees.
Okay. And the reason that I asked, and I don't know if you have to do anything with this. Well, actually, you do, Dr. Murphy. I ask you for a follow-up on GIRA because it was brought to my attention that two educational institutions were interested in partnering with us regarding GIRA, and we turned them down.
We turned down EPCC, and we went with EPISD, and then we didn't get it.
And I think also UTEP.
And now
we're not even funded with any of them.
No, and I explained that in the Friday packet. Only. There was an 83% decrease in GIRA grant awards in the state of Texas this year. The only grant that was awarded was UTEP and Socorro. And from the very start, UTEP was going with Socorro and no other district. We had no opportunity to go with UTEP, best of my knowledge. But, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm listening to you.
That is my information that I have. We thought we could maximize our chance by doing a urban-suburban or an urban-rural partnership with EPISD. And as I wrote, the partnership was formed before any of the controversies that occurred this summer with EPISD occurred. It happened all before that. And we didn't win, nor did anyone else except UTEP and Socorro.
So did you get notified that you were not you, but the district, our district was not awarded, or?
Yes.
So that's what I want this in place, because we want to be notified what's going on.
Notified?
Well, we weren't, I mean, you applied.
Right, and we presented to you that we were going to go with EPISD in a suburban, rural, or urban-suburban partnership, because that's one of the options in the GIRA that you can do. And we notified you of that. I could go back and check the minutes and find out when. Ms. Fierro made a presentation. No?
Can you look for that?
Sure.
Because.
I can certainly find that out.
Did EPCC partner with anybody that you know of?
I don't know. I have an appointment on Thursday morning with Dennis Brown, the Vice President, to go over several issues, and I can add that to the list.
I know EPCC had a couple of school districts. They have Fabens, they have Anthony ISD. I know this is our last year with EPCC. And there's one other school district I can't recall. That other, but I know there was at least four school districts.
Remember, there was an 87% decrease across the state. There's no money.
How much were we receiving this last school year? Well, actually, this is our last year. How much?
This is our last year. I want to say we get approximately $40,000, but I will double check. I have my computer. I can get that number for you.
Okay. And you don't know if the other districts were the ones that were went with EPCC previously, were they also awarded by any chance, to your knowledge?
No, they weren't awarded. Basically, what happened is when the Canadillo did not go with EPCC, of course, the amount that the districts were going to get was increased. However, EPCC was not awarded the GEROP. And I did speak with Marisa Pierce, who was a rep that we dealt with on GEROP issues.
Okay. Any questions?
I'll find you that information. I'm hoping I'm right. I think I'm right on the partnership.
I do have a question. I noticed we got in the Friday packet a list of the grants we have been awarded this year. I don't see anything really innovative, I mean, they're just like, okay, got those things. And those, not to kick a gift horse in the mouth in any way, shape, or form, but I don't, Dr. Murphy, see anything being done to get outside the box with grant writing. And I think that's something the board has been really specific with you about, and with your predecessors and then before them, and you know, since time began, that's important to us.
I would like to make a comment to that. We right now, through the TEA agency, they do offer certain grants. However, we are not eligible for the ones that they have. There is one that was released on Monday, and it's called Texas Literacy Initiative. There is a webinar on October 19th, and so we will be getting, or Ms. Zuniga will be getting in touch with Ms. Fierro and other campuses, as they haven't indicated who is eligible within our district, but it's a PK-12 initiative. It's a 5-year grant. And so we're definitely going to see who qualifies and move forward with this. I will tell you, we also have one for Music Educators of America. That one is due on the Monday, as a matter of fact. We did communicate with Mr. Ramos at the high school. However, he has not provided the information that we're needing to follow through. And I will say that a lot of times when we present the grant information to the certain organization or designated mm-hmm. person that would benefit from it, many a time they find that perhaps it's not, there's a lot more, what should I say, a lot of effort on our part to do a lot of the reporting and gathering of information to the amount of
more. Mm-hmm. I understand that's not cost effective.
Right. And so those have been the experiences we have seen. But like I said, the Texas Literacy Initiative is one that we're certainly going to move forward with. They're not coming around as much as we do have certain listserv that pretty much it's emails that we get from different funding agencies mm-hmm. throughout the nation, from governmental, you know, federal to state and local. And it's just nothing that really applies to our area. We did look at some that were about energy savings. We did get in touch with Mr. Armendariz, but again, we continue asking for an update so that we can move forward with a proposal. However, there's some information that we do need before we can move forward.
I understand that, but somebody needs to really be sniffing the bushes, looking for grants, and you know, $1,000 is $1,000. It's not cost effective, it's totally understandable, but I know there's still money. There is money, and we do fit a lot of, I mean, we've just had our class size waiver with two schools being set as, I don't know what the wording was, financial hardship. That alone should cause our school district to be first above many. And I, as a board member in the past year, I haven't seen anybody, and it could be a personnel issue, I don't know, but pursuing grants. But what I do see is grants that have been pursued and run out, we keep funding what ran out on our own dime now. And I have an issue with that when the grant runs out, everything should be run. The person's gone. In fact, we have policy that says that grant runs out and mm-hmm. you go away.
We don't have any of in the last 2 years that any of the grants that have expired have not involved, or I should say the district has not absorbed those salaries. But I you are correct. In mm-hmm. the past, many of the personnel we have on board was a result of a
carryovers. But I really wouldn't, Dr. Murphy, it's not just me. I mean, we've spoken, this is a body corporate. We need the help. We need somebody to look at that specifically. And I think it ought to be, Lefty, I'd like this committee's recommendation to the entire board that, you know, look a little harder, dig a little deeper. It's there. Mm-hmm. And come back with something, you know, innovative, like your music one. Yeah, there's got to be other music ones. Our taxpayers could use relief.
Mm-hmm. We will continue seeking out for grants. You also got an ARA update. I don't know if you had any questions on this or wanted to discuss anything there.
$6.9 million down to $67, what?
$62.
Pretty good.
I will say, warehouse was on that house that Friday with all the deliveries that were coming in.
Madam Chair, I then would, I don't know if we need to do any kind of approval on D or not, do we? Recommend it to the board with the changes as.
It's a regulation.
No, there's nothing.
It was information.
We need to recommend it to administration, which is dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, I'll just say in my defense, I did find a music grant within the last 30 days. Also, when we get the associate superintendent next year, that certainly can fall under that purview as well. Thirdly, there are larger districts have a grant person fully, and their salary is normally paid for out of the grants or something like that. We don't have anything like that.
We used to.
Well, we don't now.
I don't know where they went.
The position that we have as external funding coordinator basically is the one that's overseeing a lot of the compliance with the federal entitlements, which is where it gets a little sticky.
But they're not out seeking innovative.
No, that is the extent of a grant writer that we have, and definitely that doesn't mean that we lessen the responsibility. We definitely do try to seek for those grants. Just like I said, we haven't been able to find something that we can follow through with, but we'll continue.
Yeah, because the job description includes the grant writing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It does, but it's unlike like in El Paso, I see, where it's like our only job.
El Paso ISD is a big district.
But they're looking for the exact same grants that you're asking me to look for.
I know.
There's not a different pot of grants for Canyon-Tio than there are for El Paso ISD. And we are handicapped in that area. We don't have the robust staff to do that like the larger districts do.
But that position was created specifically mm-hmm. and it included...
That position was a grant writer, and then it was changed to an external funding coordinator so they could get a raise. That's what it was. And
well,
that's what they were geared around, was grants, and then they added other stuff to it. And since that individual left, it has not been the same. There is nothing going on with grant writing. There's not.
I would differ. I mean, like I said, we found a music grant in the last 30 days. We'll find another one in the next 30 days. But we don't have the resources to have someone fully dedicated to that. I can't be doing that every day. I mean,
That's not your job.
Mm-mm.
But it is somebody's in their job description, I know.
But it's only a portion of the job description. And also, I will also tell you that the economy is not such that there are large, like for instance, the GEAR Up grants shrunk by 83% across the state this year. And, you know, it's not as readily available, I think, as what you're thinking they are. Tomorrow morning, if I got up in 2 hours, tried to find $100,000 worth of grants, it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it isn't, but I know that, I mean, just past knowledge, JDW Insurance has a nice big pot of money every year that they give away to local entities. You have to apply by a certain date. We're already past that. We missed it. So we're not going to get that. We could have applied for that. We could have been in the running. I haven't seen anybody. Their pot didn't dry up. it's still there. And that's just a mild example. There are local places, even, it doesn't even have to be the big scene, that, you know, do have some money left. So for whatever it's worth, Dr. Murphy, please just, you know, maybe. Yes.
I did get $1,500 for the signs we put up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That'll be coming when we set up and put up the third sign.
Okay. Any more questions? Any more comments? Okay. Next agenda item, please.
Item two, discussion and possible formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding equity center legal action. Dr. Martin.
Madam Chair, board members, audience. We decided that we wanted to bring this to both committees. This is an agenda item for both tonight and for Thursday night, because it kind of spans both committees. And then we'll have it on October 19th at the board meeting, next Wednesday. There are, I think by last count, there's almost 200 school districts across the state that have joined the Equity Center or the David Thompson and Associates lawsuits, the largest one being the Equity Center, which we're members of this year. And it is administration's recommendation that we do join the Equity Center lawsuit. I spoke with Ken Parker today, the CFO at El Paso ISD. They're absolutely going to join. In fact, I think they're joining tonight. Their board meeting is tonight, as are the majority of the school districts in El Paso County. What happened to us this summer, and I had a conversation with Paul Kohlberg, former legislator and lobbyist for the Equity Center. I told him, I said, well, Paul, you know, maybe we don't want to join because it costs a little money. The cost of the lawsuit is $1 per student, $1 per WADA. So we would be paying, it's a one-time payment of $1 per WADA, which means we would be paying about $6,000 to the Equity Center, which is a big chunk of money. And I said to Paul, I said, well, Paul, maybe we won't join it. I mean, we did pass our TRE. We're probably doing a little better in some of these other districts. And, you know, $6,000 is $6,000. And Paul got all over me. And he said, Dr. Murphy, you are actually the poster child for this lawsuit. You told your constituents that really the only reason you needed that TRE was to make up for the cut, the inappropriate cut that the state made. And they need to hear that. In the lawsuit, it needs to be shown that districts are having to go out and tax their constituents due to these cuts. And he convinced me absolutely. And I am a firm believer that we do need to join this fight. And it is my recommendation. Now, there are two lawsuits. You only have the information on the Equity Center one, because it really is really the only one that fits our district. There are two issues involved in school finance that are at play this summer and fall, and that is equity and adequacy. The notion of adequacy meaning is it adequate, is it enough? Does the state fund your district adequately and or enough? Then the other question is equity. Does the state fund all districts equally? Well, you can imagine that no district right now thinks that they're funded adequately. So everybody's on board with that. But you also can imagine that there are wealthy districts who don't want the equity side of the house. They just want adequacy. A district like Barbers Hill outside of Houston, or Alamo Heights in San Antonio, they're not interested in equity because that would mean them giving up more money to give to other districts. They do have an attorney. His name is David Thompson. He's a very prominent legal education attorney out of Austin. And he is filing a lawsuit on behalf of wealthy districts that are asking for the $4 billion back that they cut from public ed, but are not asking for any type of change as far as spreading the wealth a little wider. The Equity Center is asking for the same thing David Thompson is asking for. They're asking to get the $4 billion back, but at the same time, they're asking for equity and that it be spread more evenly. Certainly, that is much more in the vein of KUTO ISD, and so it is administration's recommendation that we join the Equity Center lawsuit. And you have been given information about it. Thank you very much. I'll take any questions you might have.
I have a question, Dr. Murphy. What is administration suggesting that we pay? The dollar per WADA or the lesser amount?
No, the dollar per WADA is, that's what I meant.
It's okay, because they will take less.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
They'll take anything you give them.
They'll take anything you'll give them. The feeling is it's a dollar per WADA. It's the correct term. He did emphasize it's a one-time fee. There's no, they won't come back and ask for more.
Will we reap any benefit from that? Other than the obvious, you know, with the law.
Brotherhood, you know. I
no
mean,
class action suit money coming.
No, hopefully we'll see a change in the legislation, and it'll certainly go to the Texas Supreme Court. And, you know, hopefully we'll see stuff like the target revenue laws change, and school districts like Canyon-Teo, Fabens, Clint, Anthony, these types of school districts receiving funding at the same levels of Barbers Hill and Alamo Heights and the other districts like that around the state. And so we highly recommend it.
Ms. Rachel? Ms. Monica?
If anyhow, we do need help. Well, every district in Texas needs help right now. So, if it does, by everybody uniting, if it does help, maybe bring it together.
I'm fine.
Have any questions?
No.
I guess I don't have any questions either. I guess.
One thing that I might clarify, Ms. Aguirre, where would the $6,000 come from?
We have to basically just look through the district-wide expenditures or budgeted amount and pull from there.
Would it be feasible to do so?
Yeah, certainly can do.
From the grant we're going to get.
Yes, ma'am.
Just come right off the top.
It's not one of our 39 performance objectives, Ms. Sorensen.
Oh, sorry. I forgot. No. I gotta
tell you something. Okay. Committee recommends it to the full board for approval.
Thank you.
Next agenda item, please.
Item G, preliminary discussion regarding work plan for the 2012-13 compensation package. Ms. Garza.
Thank you, Gustavo.
Well, this evening I'd like to start a preliminary discussion on the direction that we want to go with our compensation plan for this coming school year, 2012-2013. And indeed, managing employee compensation in tough times. We are still in tough times, in very tough times. And as Dr. Murphy has said, we still have to run pretty slick. So given that the case, should an EOISD, there are certain things that we probably need to do. And that would be to review our current practices and procedures in regards to pay. Of course, we want to be prepared for what's coming down the line in our future. We need to discover or research what are the pay practices of our surrounding districts and other employers. We should ensure that we have competitive pay for those jobs that are critical to our organization. And we also, given our budget situation, we should apply, we have limited salary dollars, and we should use those strategically and control costs. You could also ask, why don't we do nothing? Let's just leave everything status quo. Well, we could do that. However, we could have vacancies, large amount of vacancies. There are highs and lows within our pay scales. Poor pay practices, hiring, promotions, it would be even more difficult to fill, you know, for promotions within our district. There are certainly some pay equity issues that we need to look at. Inflated stipends. Many times, because salaries are low, we try and compensate with stipends. So at some point, stipends can come and become inflated. We have Fair Labor Standards Act classification errors. Grievances or lawsuits sometimes arise as a result of these issues. However, there is help available. Over a week and a half ago, we had the opportunity to travel to Boston and I attended some of the HR classes offered by the Texas Association of School Boards. And they have a compensation consulting service that is offered to the school districts throughout the state. They have 900 public schools as members. Since 1984, the compensation consultants have designed and installed pay plans for over 500 school districts in Texas. And there is really no other consulting service that's more knowledgeable or experienced in compensation studies within the school districts in the state. Dr. Murphy and I, I had the opportunity to attend several sessions sponsored by the HR services, and Dr. Murphy and I had the opportunity to meet with some of their staff, their compensation staff, and one of the things in talking to them that, you know, we did mention that we were interested in having them come and do a compensation study and assist the district with some of the issues that we have as far as our pay scales. And one of the, there were three items or three stipulations that Dr. Murphy mentioned that he was very interested that we have that. Dr. Murphy?
And if I might, through the chair, we did a TASB study when we did the Budget Stakeholders Committee, and we very much appreciated it. It was extremely helpful. However, there were concerns that it was a bit rigid and that it was their way or the highway type of attitude. And so, and in moving forward and now looking at a compensation study, their study wasn't specifically compensation, it was more cost-cutting type of things. This one, a compensation study, I want to make sure from the very outset that we have, well, what she's calling the superintendent's parameters that allow flexibility and also customization for our specific needs. And so this is what we've asked, and they have readily agreed. So go ahead.
Yes, they have. And one of the things is that they will include in their study 24 Texas ISDs that we can compare ourselves to. For example, we want to know the surrounding area. We want all the Region 19 districts. So, and I will show you those in a minute, but those are part of, going to be part of the study. There's also been several other districts that we've used to compare ourselves to, whether in tax scores or, you know, something similar to our size. And so those are our districts that I know that Dr. Murphy has presented to you all in different comparison studies, and we want to use those same districts. And of course, TASB will still do their overall study, and this would be kind of a subset to what they usually do. The study must also include local verification component, and I think that when we were going through the compensation in the summer, that was something that I heard from the board members, is that wanted us to verify personally, you know, to look at what the other districts were doing and what their pay scales look like. And so we have insisted that we will verify and validate the information. You know, it's going to be very...
A portion.
We will be very hands-on and work closely together with them as far as doing this study. Also, a component built into the study that would allow, as Dr. Murphy has already mentioned, that would allow administration to make adjustments, salary adjustments of within a 10%, 10% of the framework of the study that they provided. So these are the parameters that have been set out for them and that they have agreed that they would abide by.
Let me explain number three. Again, the TASB might come back with a salary figure or a pay scale figure that we initially disagree with, whether it be low, whether it be high, and within, and so you go back, please, within the architecture of the study, within the very framework of the study, we would embed a component that would allow a 10% variance if we saw something that we ourselves felt was out of line. We'd be limited to 10%. We wouldn't go above and beyond that, but we would have that. And so it wouldn't be an inordinate thing to vary. We would have that 10% opportunity. And I would think it would be more a function of administration and not of the board. I do not think the board would want to be getting into this particular salary needs to be up 10%, this particular salary needs to be down 10%. But it would, at the administration level, bringing you the recommendations, allow for a variance instead of just taking TASB's word. And again, that allows flexibility.
That's correct. And like I said, we've met with TASB and they have agreed to those terms. And as you can see here, Region 19 districts, El Paso ISD, Islet ISD, Socorro ISD, so they're all within the surrounding area, within the region. Other ISDs that are similar in size and demographics.
That list we call the Canyon TO 10, and those are the 10 districts in the state, 9. We're number 10 on that list. We're number 1 on that list. But those 9 districts are the 9 districts in the state that most match to us regarding demographics. 60-70% minimum Hispanic, 60-70% minimum LEP students. About 5,000 to 7,000 in size. These are the 9 districts that match us best. The other ones are the Texas ISDs of similar size in a suburban setting. And these are all the districts in the state save one, and that one is Highland Park, and I don't think we want to mess with Highland Park. We're not going to put it there. But these are the other eight districts that are between 5,000 and 7,000 students that are suburban to an urban area in the entire state. So we think that by including the El Paso County districts as a special subset, the districts that are as the same size of us and the same demographics as us as a special subset, and the districts that are suburban to an urban area that are also our size as a special subset, we're really going to be able to zero in. And then you take that, and then you also have all the massive database that TASB will do just regularly. And I think we're going to get a really good look at what it is.
So some of the scope of services that TASB is proposing is the placement of selected job titles will be reviewed and changes recommended if indicated. There is going to be a comparison to an external competitive job market. They're going to be analyzed for benchmark jobs to identify strengths and weaknesses in our current pay practices. Pay range controls will be evaluated for each job level. Pay ranges will be realigned to maintain competitiveness and affordability. Corrective pay adjustments will be recommended for individuals who are considered to be retention risk. or otherwise improperly paid, a detailed implementation plan with cost estimates and individual pay adjustments will be developed. Written procedures will be reviewed and revised or developed to guide continuing control of the pay system, and they will have on-site briefings and documentation of findings and recommendations will be provided to the district with a final report after administration reviews.
Will they present in front of the board?
Yes, they will. Basically, the cost for this is $10,000 plus travel. So when we bring them in, we will pay for that. And so I really think that there needs to be some interaction with this TASB group so that they can explain, they can not only with administration provide some guidance, but also for the board. And then you all have the opportunity to ask as many questions as you wish as it's being developed. One of the things when I approached Dr. Murphy on this was that I don't want to do things at the last minute. So that's why we're here in October already preparing for this so that we can, as we move along, you know, we're trying to do things as carefully as possible. And so we've got plenty of time to do this. And talking to them, they're hoping that as we work through this, that by April we would have the information, the final recommendations that they can move forth. But in the interim, I do want that interaction with them. I do want them to come down. I do want them to present before the board so that there is some comfort level on your part and you can ask as many questions as you want. Of course, I wanted to mention some of the benefits that of a well-maintained compensation plan is, of course, employee morale. Increased trust, it supports the district's mission and philosophy. It provides a valuable management tool for the superintendent, the ability to manage the cost, and of course the stewardship of taxpayers' money. So that is the direction that we're planning to go into. I wanted to present this as a discussion for this committee because if this is not the direction, that you all want us to go into, I'm ready to entertain any suggestions or, direction or additional information that you might need for this information. And what I would like to do is to, if you all agree with this, so that we can move forward with the contract for the October 19th meeting.
Ms. Chair,
Ms. Cáceres.
Ms. Carrasco, by any chance, do you have a copy of the last TASB study that was done and the results and how the people were selected?
I can research it. I've not seen it, but it might be on file in my office tomorrow. I've not seen it. And you're not talking about the one that was done?
I'm not talking about for cuts. I'm talking about the one that was done, what, in 07, maybe? 06. 06, 07, that time frame. I know it was done once, and then there was like a mini one done, and only certain jobs were
certain positions.
Certain positions had to fill out a survey, and they were
upgraded
or whatever you want to call it, reviewed, whatever. And I want to ask, how do you foresee starting, spearheading this? Where are you going to do the district in whole? Are you going to do certain positions? How are you planning to start this?
Well, to start off, I know that in doing what we did last summer, I mean, TASB does request information for every employee within the district. Mm-hmm. And again, that is in our conversation that they want us to provide them information as to each employee, what pay grade they're at, what their current salary, how many days they work, all the years of experience, years in the district. So we need to provide them with all that information. And like I said, I'm hoping that this study is more interactive, where it's not just turning over the information and, they give us back something and this is what we need to follow. I am also interested in the knowing, you know, why what and why this is happening, what were we going to do with this, and then move forward from there. But initially, right now, you know, everything would start with the contract. What I've already done on my own is that I have collected data from the districts here in town, and so we put that together already. I think also on the 21st of October, there is a deadline for all school districts to submit their employee information to TASB. And so I'm pretty sure that the information that they're going to use to do this study is going to be based on the information that's submitted on October 31st. So we will have current data to look at. All the information that's submitted is housed in what they call Data Central at TASB. And I have access to that information. So whatever reviews and information that they obtain, I can look at also through this Data Central. And this is, again, you know, I have a deadline to submit the information for our district to TASB by October 31st. And so it is a lengthy survey that is asking about each of the positions. And so that's the same exercise that all the other districts are doing. And we will have access to that complete information. So I will follow their lead. However, you know, they are in agreement that, you know, we will validate some of the data and information that they are proposing. So I would venture to say that right off, I mean, they do some groundwork as far as comparing. And here again, I'm just saying as far as comparing positions. And I guess those positions that are way off the target are the ones that they're going to hone in on. But again, as we go through this process, this is what I want. I want to explain to you thoroughly, as you know, so there will be continuous updates. It's not like you're going to say, let's go with it now, and then you don't hear back until April, okay, this is a result. What I want is, you know, along the way, we provide you with updates, not only from my office, but also from TASB, and having them come in so that, you know, the comfort level is there, and you can ask any questions you want about how and why certain things were done.
Okay. That's all for me. Thank you.
Ms. Searles?
I do have a question. I believe it was in the Friday packet, and sort of to echo what you're saying and what I'm reading here, it's going to require the staff to do a significant amount of salary discovery on your own.
Yes,
that's the verification part.
Uh-huh. And you're happy to do that? You're able to? I mean...
Well, I've been tasked to do that, so okay. Yes, we will find a way to
able?
Do that.
Okay.
Yes.
And even if you think about it, the thousands of pieces of data that the study will generate, even if we only did a local verification of 5 to 10% of all those data points, it still would be a worthwhile exercise and a good opportunity for us to verify, to see that everything's going correctly. We make no promise that we will verify even a quarter of all the data that TASB would give us, but we would do as much as we could and track that and rubric that and be able to show the board the work that we did.
Like I said, it is a financial commitment also, so you know, I want to make sure that you all are in agreement before we proceed with that.
So in here in the Eagles on the Friday weekly update, it says an amount. So how much are we anticipating?
Well, it's $10,000 is what they have on the contract. It is $10,000. TASB will charge a consulting fee of $10,000 for all services and materials described within the scope of the contract. And they also want reimbursement of travel and out-of-pocket expenses will be charged in addition to the service fee. So I am probably going to make a purchase order for about $15,000. And it's $10,000, and I'm going to put five more just to cover whatever. Hopefully it's less than the $5,000. But I plan to make that purchase order for $15,000.
Ms. Searles.
I'd like to request that they stay right next door so they don't have to come very far.
and I will put in a call to them that, you know, for example, we're going to know when they're coming. That certainly, you know, we use the money, you know, with caution and try it at a savings where we book flights, you know, ahead of time and then, you know, right here next
door. Yeah, it's a nice place to stay. They get some breakfast. Come to work ready. Rudy's for dinner. Yeah, don't need a rent car.
Run you.
So certainly I will discuss that with them once we move forward with the approval of the contract.
Okay, here's I don't think we need to take any action.
Well, I think we would recommend a study to the board. It would be the
contract.
It just says preliminary discussion.
Well, we certainly can bring it back on Wednesday to the board. My goal, and I've talked offline, Rachel, I don't think you and I have talked, but I know I've talked to the three of you. I want to make sure that we go into this with that we build this study correctly so that we're all happy with it. I don't want administration doing something that then the board says, well, that isn't really what we wanted. I want to, here we are in October, we're showing you the architecture, these superintendent's parameters that we built in. We're open, if there's something else you want us to put in, we want to really do this as a team because it's very important, critical to our success, and we really need to do this together. So if you do, over the next week and a half, week and a day, I guess, have other things you want me to include, call me, and we'll certainly get it on the slide to present in front of the board next week. It's also cheaper. $10,000 seems like a lot, but the cut one that they did for the budget stakeholders was $20,000. This is only $10,000 plus travel. So it's actually a cheaper study than what they did for us before.
I applaud you for bringing it to the board so early and with this thought in mind that, you know, we start early instead of next April. Everybody's going, oh, I don't know.
Right.
That's very good, great planning, and I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Martha. And I'm glad you went to that trip and took the time to visit with TASB staff.
Yeah. So we'll bring it before on the 19th for discussion.
Mm-hmm. And probably with action if you need to get a contract going.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Possible action.
Thank you.
Next agenda item, please.
Item H, limited English proficient LEP student report, Mr. Lepkowski. Yeah. Thank you.
Board members, Dr. Murphy, thank you very much for this great opportunity to present to you numbers and some of the academic and linguistic results of the academic language department. First of all, I would like to say that all of this and have been done without the support from Margarita Marcelan McAvlin and Analisa Espinosa, who is the team member for Academic Language Services. My gratitude to all of them. Also, I would like to say that we have a bilingual paraprofessional in each one of the schools, exception with the high school. We have Miriam Babenko, who is a full, fully certified teacher, who is the ESL facilitator. Also, under Title III money, we provide tutors to each one of the schools and also to the LEP grant. So we have an academic and linguistic tutor in each one of the school. And Canutillo Middle School and Canutillo High School, they have two in the grant. So thank you to the support that they provide to our students. I would like to say that the goal for bilingual education in Canutillo is this. First of all, it's the academic success of all the students who are following our school district. Especially that if you all, how do we measure this? We measure this through the tax test. It's going to be that any other ability. We also, one of the second goals is that English language proficiency. We need to, for those kids to acquire enough English so they can have success in beyond the 12th grade. How do we assess this? We assess this to help us and also to South. And also we want to, for those students to maintain the first language. We don't want for them to forget the Spanish or we have a couple of Chinese students. What are some of the challenges for English learners in kind of the U.S. and across all in the United States? The first one is learning English. I mean, learning English is a big, big challenge for those students. I remember I was in first day of school, we were assigned to go to the campuses, and I was in kind of the middle school. One of the kids where he was walking around the cafeteria when he's supposed to be outside, and I asked him, what are you doing here? He never responded to me, and then I approached him again, what are you doing here? And he told me, this is my first day in Spanish, of course, he told me, this is my first day here. No entiendo nada de English. And so this is my final thought. One of the second challenge of the second challenge for SPLs is they need to learn, you need to be learning content through English. We don't provide a specific English lesson like ESL. I mean, class would they need to be learning English through math and science and social studies and of course English by itself. And the third challenge is they need to be learning about the language. And what I mean by learning about the language is the complexity of the English language is not easy, but those are the big challenges. The number of students for this school year, I mean, you have the table in front of you. Elementary level, we have 1,230 students in total. Until elementary is always in the highest concentration of the OS, and then we have UCLA's Diana David for Jose Damiani Garcia. For high school, we have 414 students in bursary in the high school. This gives us a total of 1,644. In addition to this number, we have the English native speakers who are holding our dual language program at the elementary level. And you have the numbers over there in front of you. This year, we have a total of 344 students.
Could you go back one slide, sure, please? I have 1634 as my
sixth. Oh, yes, we updated. I updated.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I updated.
Okay. Thank you.
If I ever see the new teams, you know.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
At what grade level do you start? I know that they take a test, but at what grade level do they start exiting?
Okay, we wait for a couple of slides and then I will explain that to you.
Okay.
The information is right there. So when we put all this number together, I mean, Tamil language services, we're providing services to 33% of the student population based on 600 students population in the total district. These are estimated numbers. In addition to this, we need to provide students to act as an SS of the first year and second year student for the exit our program, and we need to be monitoring the academic progress. And maybe this is going to respond to your answer, Mrs. Gonzalez. We're sort of the top result for the lab admission. Did you see the bottom where we had the total number of students? In third grade, we have a number of, by one of the recommendations from Dr. Murphy, we're testing more and more students in English. By third grade in reading, we tested 48. By fifth grade, we tested 51. And by fifth grade, we tested 109. So actually, this means like when the student passed the past test in English, the reading portion, and reached advanced high on the top class, that's through the major
part of the question. I'm sorry, but which chart is that? What page is that?
This is reading lab.
Reading lab?
This one? This
person. And what campus are you referring to?
This is the total. This is the total grade 3 to 5.
Okay. Okay.
This is the bottom portion.
Right.
So actually, Mrs. Gonzalez, in responding to you, if we have 109 students who already passed reading tasks, that means like, possibility like 109 students would be exit from the program as long as they reach the best high. But if they pass tax tests, I mean in English, big possibility that they are very rich at Mass High in Thomas.
And let me ask you, what I was asking this question, a fifth grade teacher, and this is just the fifth grade teacher, it came up to me and she said that it had to do with a tax test that she had to, I think it, there was some issues with the tax test, and she felt that fifth grade level was at the fifth grade level was actually they should have been exceeded at lower grade level, because fifth grade is way too for them to be received in fifth grade. Bilingual classes was way too, they should have been exited way long ago.
Well, what is happening here, I mean, is what is the research telling us? I mean, the research is telling us when you get a newcomer, I mean, give that person 5 to 6 years to develop that cognitive
ability. Well, this is a teacher.
No, I'm telling
this
you.
Is a teacher that is.
Absolutely. But if you see this, I mean, if you see in fifth grade, I mean, when we tested in English, when we test 109 students, and we have a passing percent of 94% passing in the second language. And commended rate is 25%. I mean, congratulations to those kids, because, I mean, they have been tested in the second language by fifth grade at a percentage of 94%. Few school districts, I mean, in the state of Texas, had the luxury to have those passing percentage. 94% of the students who were tested in English, reading in English, passed the tax test. If we, I mean, we don't make the decision. I mean, Academic Language Services, we don't make the decision who's supposed to be exit from the program, who wasn't supposed to exit from the program. Each one of the school campuses, they have the LPAC committee. We meet every month. And by December, we have a task designation. By December, we decided who's going to be tested in English and who's going to be tested in Spanish. But after the tax test and after the TELPAS, then the LPAC committee make the decision who's supposed to exit the program and who doesn't supposed to exit the program.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
This is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. It's something that I did extremely carefully when I was in El Paso ISD and now here. You're absolutely right, Letty. If you look at the chart on the reading, this box right here, total grades 3 through 5, shows the number of students taking it in English, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and 3rd only 48, and 4th 51, and then 5th jumping all the way to 109 students across the district taking it in English. So the number grows. But if you look over here on the Spanish side, you'll see the number diminishes, 151, 139 to 69. So, you know, the English comes up, the Spanish comes down. And I absolutely agree. I think we would all agree, we would like to see the English number higher and the Spanish number lower. And I'm sure on the other charts you see something similar. And we're working in that direction. And the thing is that you have to work specifically. You just can't say, well, let's just test more kids in English.
No, and I'm not the professional here.
Right, absolutely. But you bring up a really good point, and I absolutely agree. What we did last year was we started saying specifically, show me the students that are on the TELPAS, which is the writing component, scored really well, but they didn't get a chance to take the English tax. Show me the writing scores that they did well on, but they did not take the English tax, specifically that they received an advanced high on TELPAS. And we kind of said, okay, if they received that advanced high on TELPAS, now let's test them in English. And we kind of did that with that group. And we had great success. You'll see 92% passage. I think the next step that we need to do first of all, continue looking at the advanced high, maybe even now looking at some of the advanced kids. I think another thing, Antonio, and I don't know if we fully discussed this, but I know Personnel Committee has discussed it, and I've discussed it with certain staff members, is we have a system called one-way bilingual, which is our lower achieving LEP kids, that in some campuses we have all the way up to fifth grade, other campuses we have only up to fourth grade, and other campuses we only have up to third grade. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to set a district standard that says no one-way bilingual in fifth grade anymore after this year.
Yeah.
And fourth grade, we can discuss fourth grade. we need to start setting these benchmarks like we did with the advanced high benchmark, and we made that, and now we're moving forward to success. I think we need to do now with the one-way bilinguals and maybe going to the advanced on telepaths, but you know, working very quickly to limit these numbers. Because here's the deal. It seems like a compassionate thing to do to let these kids test in Spanish. And in a sense, it is. But in a larger sense, it's the exact opposite. Because when those guys hit sixth grade, there is no Spanish test available anymore. No Spanish test. Even if we had every desire in the world to give them a Spanish test, it's not available. And there also is not a bilingual program. There is an ESL program. And if the kid has not gotten proficient by fifth grade, especially if they were born and raised in Cañatillo, you know, there's this talk about these new immigrants, like Antonio brought up, it was his first day. You know, I think we all understand that. My concern is when I run into kids that were born in Cañatillo and went to CE as pre-K, and in fifth grade, they're still sitting in one-way bilingual. That is the issue, in my opinion, that we really need to work on. And then it's not compassionate to do that, because once they hit middle school, they're sunk. And so the benevolent thing to do and the compassionate thing to do is to more quickly get them to English. And that is certainly the aim and the desire of administration. And I appreciate Antonio. You know, Antonio, the previous superintendent didn't think like I think. I don't. At least I've heard that. And Antonio has had to flex. And he's done a good job. And I appreciate that, Antonio. And he's done, I think, good work. But it is certainly a work in process. But we're certainly moving toward, Leti, what you were saying about a quicker exit strategy.
Madam Chair, can I make a recommendation? Dr. Murphy, could you bring this committee back a policy?
We can. The problem is it's like special education in the sense that it's by child. It's got to be...
Understandable, but yeah. We have goals. That
yeah, goals, yes.
The goal of this district would be that... Yeah. You fill in the blanks.
That we become an early exit district as opposed to a late exit district.
Exactly.
That we
have high
set benchmarks yearly...
Absolutely. Could you bring that back in the next 2 months, possibly?
Absolutely. I can tell you that it is not a difficult thing because it is certainly something that's in. It's not like the grant thing. See, if you tell me your grants, I got to get up tomorrow morning and go figure this thing out. The LEP thing isn't like that. That is in process. We are working hard on that on a daily basis. So we certainly can bring that back. They're giggling. They're the ones that are getting out and fighting for
them. Dr. Murphy.
Oh, is that what you were saying?
Dr. Murphy. Did I interrupt you? And what you were saying about him flexing, I mean, it's good that he's flexing, but he has to flex because we're here in the best interest of the kids.
Absolutely.
I like what you said about policy and the goals.
Yeah, in the next 2 months, I'd like to see that. Tony is not here, so could you take the...
Carlos,
could you note that for Dr. Murphy that will...
And then I remember a couple of years, 2-3 years ago, we had some students that were not graduating, and they sent us some letters in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Because they were not graduating, and they sent us the letters in Spanish.
And it's tragic.
Up until
this year, we were even teaching ESL at the 12th grade level. That is... And it wasn't just the kids that arrived in that 30-day period or in that year period. So we do have a lot of work to do in that area. But I am confident that Antonio Panfiero certainly has the same belief I have. I know the principals do. The principals feel strongly to get in that direction, and we are. We are pressing forward.
And not only that, Dr. Murphy, I think that the parents need to be educated, or when they fill out that home language survey, when they fill out Spanish, and I had a relative too that she was born in the United States. She lived here in Cañatillo. And just because the parents filled out Spanish, they put her in a bilingual setting. She got out of the middle school. She did not even know how to speak English.
Well, and you're right about the parents. If a child has no expectation when they leave the schoolyard and they go home in the afternoon, if they have no expectation from that point until 8 o'clock the next morning that they have to speak English,
yeah,
but, that doesn't help.
But because of the way they put their Spanish, so she was put in a bilingual setting and that was it. No English, no 50-50, nothing. And I disagree with that, so.
Antonio?
When the press come to kind of TUIC, state regulation, we need to provide them with a home language survey. If they should have Spanish in any of those three questions, that give us the key to test the student. I mean, that was the only reason we had that survey. So, if they should have Spanish, then we test the student. If the student has not reached proficiency in English on that test, then we need to have a meeting with that. The LPA has to meet and say, you know what, this child has not reached proficiency in English, so that child needs to be receiving bilingual education services. The next step is we send a letter to the parents notifying them, I mean, you shall qualify to receive bilingual education services, the sort of benefits, whatever, do you agree? The child cannot be placed in a bilingual setting until we have a document signed by the parents saying, I agree. The fact that the student will be receiving bilingual education services. And after we receive the letter, then the child is placed permanently on a bilingual setting. If the parents say, you know what, and part of the letter say I refuse for my child to receive bilingual education services, if the parent just check out the box, then there is no way we can provide bilingual education services to the students.
But you just said it permanently.
No, I mean...
I know that. I know what you said.
Yes, ma'am.
But you also said permanently. They also want to remove their student, their child from bilingual services. They go through a struggle.
Yeah. No.
It's not that easy to remove them from bilingual program.
When the parents doesn't want bilingual education services, it's the district practice that they have a meeting with the principal, and they have the meeting and say, you know what, I don't want my child the program. Then after that, we have a meeting with the teacher and we say, you know, what is your perception? I mean, what is the perception of this child, whatever? And it's still the parents say, I don't want to receive any kind of bilingual services. And that's the first thing that we tell parents. I mean, we will respect your decision because we cannot impose, we cannot say this is the best type of program. We will respect your decision and we have been respecting decisions. What I'm saying is, when they check Spanish on the home language service, the student is placed in a bilingual setting. Then later on, when the student is tested, we send a letter to the parents, and if the parents say, I want the services, then the child is for the school year, is placed in a bilingual setting. Middle of the school year, the parent comes and say, I don't want anything to do with bilingual education. I mean, we have to respect the decision.
But aren't they permanently classified as bilingual through the state system?
No.
I believe our LPAC policy says that. What Ms. Gonzalez was stating and what you had said, that they are permanently.
What did I say? And I'm sorry if I didn't communicate correctly, but what I say is when the parents check up Spanish, I mean, we're temporarily placed on a bilingual setting. Then after the student is tested, if the student is proficient in English, then he's removed from the bilingual setting and placed on a monolingual setting. If the student tested below proficiency, then he's enrolled in a bilingual classroom.
And that happens every year?
That's happening. That's a state policy. I mean, that's a state policy. But the student cannot be enrolled until the parent gives us permission to provide bilingual education services. The number, something over here, because the number of students who were tested in Spanish in fifth grade, you can see is 69 in fifth grade. And you need to remember that this is the second year that we have been implementing the Truly 50-50 program. I mean, 69 students in fifth grade who were tested in Spanish, when we have a huge percentage of student population who are recent comers. I mean, most of those students who were tested in Spanish, I mean, almost 80% of us has less than 3 years in the United States. For math, I mean, this is math. I mean, the number. You can see the number that Dr. Murphy was referring. I mean, in English, we tested 48 students in third grade, and then we went to 59 in fourth grade.
to a total of, number of 127 in fifth grade. So the number is being increased here. And in Spanish, it's vice versa. We have 137 students who were, we have 153 students who were tested in Spanish, then 132 in fourth grade, and then also, 52 in fifth grade. The good thing about this is like from the 127 students who were tested in English, who took the math test in English, we have a 95% passing rate. This is a huge passing rate for those students. And the commending rate was 35%. If you can see that the math passing percentage, you can see we have Cantillo Elementary, we have 100% of out of those 10 students who were tested. In fifth grade, I mean, we have 97, 100% in Diana Davenport, 96% in Gonzalo Garcia, 92% in Jose Damian, to give us a total of 97. Let me give you an example. Jose Damian, I mean, we tested 12 students in English, 2 students in Spanish, but those 2 students were first year in the United States. I mean, it is impossible to be tested testing those students in English for the first year in the United States. But this is a decision of the LPAC. I mean, we don't make those decisions. I don't know if somebody has questions on this. The passing percentage of ELs in science is statewide. This is really, really low. But in fifth grade, we tested 129 students with a passing percentage of 81%. Only 42% were tested in Spanish with a passing percentage of 70%. In middle school and high school, I think this is when we have a big challenge, and we need to address this challenge. Because, and thank you, Dr. Mick, for the clarification, because you need to remember, I mean, I have been having several meetings with Dr. Murphy, and I agree with you, Mrs. Gonzalez. I mean, the goal is to have almost 100% of the students who have been with us since kinder for more than 3 years to be tested in English and exit them from bilingual program. That's one of the goals of the school district. But I only have been here for a couple of years. I mean, Dr. Murphy has been here for a couple of years. Right now, we are really, I'm not saying most of the teachers, I want to say 100% of our teachers are real true to the model, 1 week in English and 1 week in Spanish. Even in fifth grade, I mean, we're doing more English during the Spanish week, we're doing more English than Spanish. Some teachers still, and I respect that, some teachers still complain about, you know, in fifth grade what is happening, but those students are the result of the 1 way. I mean, remember that in the past, and I had this meeting with Dr. Murphy, in the past used to be like, if you are in a bilingual setting, I mean, testing in Spanish was a given. All the way from third to fifth grade, we didn't even discuss that. Now we're discussing even in third grade, we're discussing student by student who is ready to be tested in English and pass the test, last year the test is in English. It's student by student. When in the past was 100% of the EL were tested in Spanish. We're just moving to this, to what were you saying before. High school and middle school, you see the numbers, I mean, the numbers are not, still working so far. I mean, is this reading? And of course, I mean, everything has to be in English. 683 students took it in that reading with a passing percentage of 70%. You can see the number right there. I'm sorry. It's right here. One of the reasons that the PEO and like Dr. Murphy said before, we want more and more students in to have some kind of state assessment in English in the elementary level, so when they reach middle school, they already have that experience, and that would not be the first time they would be tested in English. Mm-hmm. For math, we have 70-75% of the students pass the math in the EL. Science is real low. I mean, science is 60%, but the state standard is 60% too. So this is kind of, we're meeting the state standard, but still we need to improve science. Something that this graph is very interesting because Every program in special education, in technology, migrant education, and bilingual education, we are, the way we're evaluated is through PBMAS.
PBMAS.
PBMAS. And if you can see here on this table, I mean, this is from 2004 to 2011, the grades, way that you can get is a zero. Zero means that you don't have nothing to improve. Zero means like, yeah, I mean, I give you money, provide services to the student, you're perfectly fine. In 2004, you can see the total numbers of points.
Mr. Del Campo.
Yes, ma'am.
But the RI is still there.
Excuse me?
The RI is still there.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see that the number of points, the number of negative points was 8 or in 2004. 2005, we went up to 13 points. And then we went up to 14 in 2006, then 12 points, I mean, that we need to improve, and then 10 points. So this year, actually, the only two areas that the state is telling us you need to improve is on science, secondary level. They give us one. I mean, that's not too bad. I mean, because they give us from 0 to 4. 4 is absolutely very, very negative. 1 is pretty decent. They give us another, one in here. Number of students who are enrolled in advanced courses, you know, in the EAP, graduation plan. And the biggest area that we need to improve is in the graduation rate. That's a big concern.
If you'll go back a slide, Antonio.
Yes, sir.
Right here, guys, look at this. Canantio High School, 11th grade. 49 left students in 11th grade taking, only 24 passing. Yeah. 49. This is what we're talking about graduation rate. They're not passing these exams. They're also having a tough time passing. If you go back one more slide, there, here is math, 49, only 70% passage. So, you know, we still have our, and there's reading, 54, only 50% passing reading. So that you're going to have the issue of the graduation with those types of test scores.
And then, Jim Crawford was saying, I mean, the challenge in the high school is going to be over. Every year is going to be there, Antonio, because this year we have 30 newcomers to the our high school. I mean, first year in the U.S.
30?
Yes, 29, between 29 and 30. So that number, I mean, 30 is, I mean, if they come as a sophomore, I mean, they will only have 1 year to learn English and also to...
You said newcomers.
First year in the United States.
Lab
students, I mean, first year in the United States.
But there's still room for improvement because, there's 50 kids with only 30 passing. I mean, there is room, certainly room.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If you see this graph, like in the past, I mean, ESL is, let me see, ESL always would have been giving us negative numbers. See this area?
Yeah.
I mean, they only give us, I mean, you need to improve in science. Yes, ma'am.
I'm noticing that there's a couple of kids at the Northwest. Have those kids been at Northwest since their freshman year?
We have 12 students, ELs, in Northwest.
12 students. We have special ed students as well.
Well, I realize that, but that I'm questioning it because I noticed that they're not doing so well in the math and in the science. And when you go to college, they don't put you in Spanish classes. I mean,
no, you're going to go back to the test score. I'm sorry, I called it Northwest.
Well, they did okay in the reading, but that's it. I mean, if you look at the percentage, it's still kind of...
Not in the freshman.
So Antonio can talk for 5 minutes about it. He's trying to help those kids get better. But also, we have a total open enrollment to Northwest. We are Ellis Island at Northwest in a manner that no other early college in El Paso is. We have no standard other than a willingness from the student to come in. And so... we do not get the same type of student that El Paso at Trans Mountain gets, that Mission at Socorro, Valle Verde, which all have standards.
I get it, Dr. Murphy, but I'm coming from a standpoint where these kids, if they're having difficulty passing standardized tests and they're taking it in their native language.
No, they're not. They're taking it in English.
Okay. Then you don't think it's, I mean, it's not hard enough for them to try to, I mean, it's a lot of pressure as it is trying to get an associate's, and they're having this kind of difficulty on these tests. I'm not saying all of them are, but I can see that some of them are. Is it the best placement for them? I mean, are we setting them up for failure?
Well, I certainly, unless we change our policies, I can't cherry pick the left kid. Oh, you're left, you can't come in. I mean, no. I'm setting myself up for a lawsuit if I do that.
No, I
think what Ms. Cousers is saying is, you know, is there not a bar?
We really need to talk about.
Is that really in the best interest of the child to say, sure, you can go play with fire. We're not going to bother to tell you it's going to burn you. You know, you're mm-hmm. figure that out on down the road. You're not stupid. You will figure out you'll get burned with the fire. Well, you know, gee, they're in 12th grade and it's too late. They're nowhere now.
Well, we're not nowhere. We're not going to have any dropouts. That's not the issue. The issue is getting the associates. So the issue is, are these students fulfilling the mission of the early college program?
And no. The mission of
some of them are not. They're simply fulfilling high school requirements, but not fully the early college requirement. But, you know, so I do think that we need to enter, and I know that the faculty at Northwest is also willing and desirous to enter into some sort of discussion about next year, what are we actually going to do. The problem is, guys, you know the old adage, if you say, okay, everybody's going to take the SAT test, well, what's going to happen to your average score? Mm-hmm. It's going to drop. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing to accept that. Mm-hmm. If you say, I'm going to set standards for admission to Northwest, what's going to happen to your enrollment number? Your enrollment number is going to come down. And we already are concerned about the enrollment number. Now, if we tighten the requirements, we're going to have a second issue regarding enrollment. And we all have to realize that going into it.
I just don't want to see these kids set up for failure. I mean, it might not be the best placement for them if they're not able to pass these tests and they're on top of it trying to get their associates. That is a lot of pressure on the student. I can't even imagine their level of frustration. That's where I'm coming from.
So we're definitely going to look at that for Ms. Savina is now on board, our new principal, and for next year coming into the summer.
But, you know, counseling should come into that somewhere along the line, that a counselor should tell the kid, you know, look, you test, they're not looking so good here. Maybe I'll give a second thought. You stay with the... Are we giving counseling to these kids?
Yes, we do give counseling. We give a lot of informational meetings, and we also require them to kind of give up their summer between their 8th and 9th grade year. But in the end, our current setup is it's completely the student's prerogative without any...
And then when we see that they're, you know, the 20 children are failing, do we not then re-counsel and say, this really isn't the program for you here? Better suited to
do. Your point is well taken.
Something else. Yeah. That, you know, we are trustees to ensure that these children get the best possible education. We're the adults here. It's on our shoulders. I hope administration understands that as a board, we want to make sure and not just let it be the spin of the wheel.
And we will be bringing this conversation back to you probably after Christmas as we start looking toward the policies for next year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We discussed that during the end of the school year LPAC meeting, when we reviewed the 8th grade LPAC, okay. And we said, okay, this student wants to go to Northwest, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Then the whole committee said, you know what, how come Antonio is making that decision? I mean, he's not ready. I mean, and then he received some kind of advice, you know, I mean,
okay, he's just not, so you guys do meet and discuss before you allow them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and sometimes we say, you know what, Antonio's, I mean, he's not the best candidate to go to, I mean, if he's even probably in the middle school, yeah. I mean, just barely passing, I mean, he's going to go here, and then we have a meeting with the student, I mean, but the student say, no, I want to go to Ignatius and to Northwest, and this is my school.
And all these kids did enter at freshman year. Yes. They didn't come in later on.
I know, but we have this discussion during our PAC meeting.
No, but I'm asking you, to the best of your knowledge, these five juniors and 10 sophomores did enter freshman year at Northwest. They didn't come in later on.
Some of them are, first year after, they have been the second year in the United States. When they make the decision to go, they come to us as an eighth graders. And then they make the decision to go to the Northwest. And
so they come in late into the United States. They come in, this is their second year into the United States, and then through an LP committee you allow it? Is that what you just said?
We allow
no. The students?
The students fill out the forms, whether they want to attend a regular high school or Northwest.
And then
the student put Northwest. And then we say, because this is a committee of teachers. This is not me, it's a committee. And
no,
then you say, Antonio is not the best candidate to attend NESHES. Let's have a meeting with Antonio and explain this to him. And then the committee would meet with Antonio and explain all the pros and the contras. But it's actually, it's up to the student decision. We cannot make the decision for the student. We cannot say, you know what, I'm sorry, but the LPAC made the decision of you not to Northwest, but we analyze all this information, and sometimes we are so happy and say, you know what, the student has been with us for 2-3 years, he's ready, he's going to succeed at Northwest, no problem at all. But teachers are very concerned, and administrators, we say, but since we don't have something in policy,
And you need to understand that we don't have anything against the bilingual.
No, absolutely, yeah. No, but we need
see,
to improve.
We're looking for the best in the best interest of the kids.
Absolutely, no. And you will see the graph. If I can go to this graph, Mr. Gonzalez, this is the numbers OEL word testing in English. From 2005 to 2011. From in 2005, we have a total number of ELs word testing in English. The number was 348. Then we went to 355, 373. So those 3 years, were very, the numbers were almost the same. By 2008, we went up to 298. The number increased by 50, almost 50 students, but it's still, number were kind of low. 2009, you can see here, this is when the state said, you know what, sixth grader need to be tested in English. So the number increased to 490, almost 100 students. Dr. Murphy and myself, we came to Canutillo 2010 and 2011. That number went from 490 to 629, and then from 629 to 710. This is almost the double of all these numbers. See the huge improvement of number of students who have.
Wow, that's impressive.
The number of students who, we believe in you, and I truly believe that. And I truly believe that English proficiency is the key to succeeding in life and to get a diploma. But this is the data is not lying. We're pushing for more students to, and it's not just like Dr. Murphy says, the decision of testing in English Spanish cannot be taken we don't want for you to fail. We want for you to pass the test. We take a lot of things in consideration. This year, in this number, I can guarantee you, I can be sitting out here next year, this number is going to increase next year. Because right now, we, at the end of the school year LPAC, we already make decisions that more third graders are going to be tested in English. But the students who are ready to be tested in English. In order for us to have this outstanding 90%, 80% passing rate in English. When I have a couple of weeks, I have a visitation from TAA, and when I was sharing this with them, they told me, well, this is the general population, and I say, no, those are the LEP population. 94% of the LEP population were tested and were passing English tests. Mm-hmm. This is the migrant, this is the PB. MAS, the Migrant Education Program. You can see here. I'm so glad that the job that Margarita Emerson is doing, because for last year she got zeros across the board. Last year over here, you can see we got a one. And also we got a one on a student who dropped out. So we have meetings and say, okay, what are we going to do? What are the strategies to improve the drop-off among migrant education students? Few migrant education programs can say, you know, they have 0 points. Few migrant education programs in the state of Texas can tell you, I mean, you got 5 points, 5 negative points on your report. I mean, few of them. Do we need to be working here? I can tell you, you know, this on graduation rate. I mean, we already have like 6 meetings with the high school people already. I mean, how we want to address this issue? What kind of services are we going to be providing to them? And like I told you, I mean, Dr. Murphy only has 2 years over here, and when we had the first meeting, every teacher at the elementary level received this calendar. And this, I mean, this is the month of October. Blue mean instruction need to be delivered in English, and the green one means the Spanish. So this is the real 50-50. I mean, and when somebody walk, even when Mr. Brigham walk into the classroom, and this is a blue week, and the teacher deliver instruction in Spanish, then we have a meeting with the school principal and say, well, what is happening here? And then we have a meeting with the teacher, and we say, you know what, we can't be doing this anymore. And this is the English week, and we expect for you to deliver instruction in English. We're getting real close to the non-negotiables of the program. And the other reason we have this outstanding improvement over here. A couple of years going through what, 220 students. And those numbers, I mean, 200 can be easy, but it's not easy to. And not only tested in English, I mean, you saw the passing rate in math. I mean, it's 90% passing rate is just amazing.
You know what that means? What that says to me? We could push it a little harder.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I would rather have an 80% passing rate and a higher percentage of students attempting to take it, especially in this year of no specific accountability.
Well, what is going to happen, Dr. Murphy? This is guiding the task designation. In the past, remember that in the past, we used to have the 90-10 models and the 50-50. I mean, we only have been implementing this district-wide for a couple of years. So, I mean, at fifth grade, I mean, with Madonado, for example, Cantillo Elementary, that group of students that she's giving instruction, they are the product of the 90-10. They were coming from the 90-10.
That's that one-way bilingual approach.
You know what I mean? I mean, this, the right implementation of this is guiding this. And next year, this number is going to increase, and the following year, the number is going to increase. Because one of the big things that we're doing now, I mean, if you pay attention over here, this is for language art. Language art is a 90-minute block. 60 minutes is an L1 for kinder to second, because this is what the research is telling us. I mean, they need to have a strong foundation in the first language. But we are adding 30 minutes of L2, explicit instruction of English. I don't want for those kids who have the same kind of problem as I'm facing. I mean, here, those kids are exposed to phonics, the rules of English that she runs, for example. Mm-hmm. So by the time they reach third grade, when it's going to be 50-50, they are absolutely ready. This calendar applied to all content areas and applied to all the domain, listening, speaking, reading, and writing. We're pushing, this is one of the big goal of Canutillo. We need to start improving the writing of our kids, and I agree with you, Mrs. Gonzalez. We need to improve the writing among our students, and it's applied to all the descriptions, beginner, intermediate, advanced, and advanced.
Okay.
I don't know.
No, I just wanted on the question you had on the early college high school. The ninth graders and tenth graders, they came in. The tenth graders came in at ninth grade. The ninth graders came in. They did not come in
later.
The tenth graders did not come in tenth grade. They all came in at with their cohort.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Del Campo.
Does somebody have any questions?
No more questions.
And I really appreciate the support. I mean, I really, really appreciate the support, because without the support for the superintendent in the 50-50, I mean, there is nothing we can do without the support.
Okay.
from the board. I mean, there is no way we can be reaching those passing rates.
You mentioned Ms. Maldonado. You board members, you know that Lily Maldonado comes and speaks to us quite regularly. She is on the front lines of this discussion. She teaches one of those fifth grade classrooms with largely low English speakers, largely of students that have been in our district a long time. And she also, she would absolutely concur with this conversation of getting the students more quickly to English is very important.
And just to close my presentation, having conversation with the sixth graders, I mean, they are so pleased with the class of 2001, the fifth grade class that we're sending to the middle school. They say they are better prepared, the English is much, much better, and we can guarantee you better results. Thank you.
Thank you. Tony.
Item I, discussion and possible formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding teen substitute teacher lodging. Ms. Brigham and Ms. Basco.
We come before you this evening to discuss moving forward with the, and this is just for discussion purposes only, or just an FYI, to bring forth the substitute module currently, which is known as the CAT system. Where HR is proposing to move forward with the Teams module on substitutes. And like I said, this is just an FYI. We still have a lot of groundwork to do as far as meeting with finance and the project managers and getting that all aligned up. But we feel that it's time to move forward with that. Technology has informed me that the CATS and the AS400 is sunsetting. And so here again, this is something that we need to move forward with.
They brought me into the discussion. The CAT system is on a standalone system. Right, what they're doing now is they're doing a hybrid between the CAT system and the Teams. What I mean by that is that Patty Romero, she comes in and she does a blend. She does the substitutes when they come in for the district and they have the orientation. They actually come in and they sign in on Teams. They accept their contract on Teams. They and then we give them like PCN, but then that stops. And then it goes into a manual form and goes over the payroll, which is very labor intensive. So right now we're doing a blend between the two systems. What we can do is bring the system up into that it will be more of a continuation with the HR and eliminate the CAT system. The CAT system is still working, but we can't upgrade it as it stands now. It can't add any functionality to it right now. The job reports that go from CATS is provided to finance, but then finance has to do manually, which we did talk to the last meeting we had with finance and payroll. They were telling me quite extensive what the background that they did have to do for the team substitute payment. And so the team substitute module is different. It's going to, it's linked, already linked into what you're doing in HR now as far as the PCN. It is part of the, there's not a cost as far as the, we're already paying for it. It's part of the module for HR. You know, so in other words, the amount we're paying, which is $6,913, I think it is, it's to some of that $7,000. That's also included, so we've been paying for the substitute module.
Gary's visit last week, we had a meeting and discussed this about the sub-module. And he has informed us that it is fully operational at other districts. And so that is a consideration to move forward. It was something that we already have. I know that the HR staff in the past has done some considerable work with it as far as already inputting the data information. So it's like we're kind of halfway there. And so now it's just a matter of pushing it forward and moving along with it. I know that in the past they were still ironing out some kinks, but Gary informed us last week that it is operational at some of the districts. He said you could call IT has already called Lubbock ISD, and they've gotten good reviews on it. So we feel that we're kind of ready to move forward with this. Hopefully, we were talking about possibly, and again, I'm just throwing this out right now. Like I said, we've got to go back to the drawing board with all the parties that would be involved, but we're looking at probably going live with this towards the end of January. So in the meantime, we want to set up a timeline, meet with, the project managers, with finance, set all this up, all the timeline, set that up, Claudia is already in contact with the team's personnel that are going to assist with this. So again, we want to make it in an organized fashion, and of course, probably, if we have any kinks, then we get them ironed out pretty quick.
Any questions, comments, concerns?
What kind of cost are we looking at?
There's no cost as far as the HR substitute module. The cost that we have to incur is that we do have to, with the phone system, put it in the phone system anyway. So there's going to be a phone system charge for there's a server charge, which is about $5,000, which we have to get with any system. The server is old. So we're looking at that will be linked to the call system. Okay, this will link to the new telephone system that we're putting in. One thing that is totally different, which is a point that I need to bring, is that this is an online system, as is everything that's going on. Anything called in the CassiChat, email. Okay. So even substitutes that do not have an email account, and I talked to Patty today, and I will talk with finance when we meet with finance and when we have a meeting with the staff, is that we could give all substitutes an email address. So I have no problem doing that at all, which we do that. We can do that now. So we'll take away that extra. But almost any system that we're looking at, even with the CATS, if we went to a different CATS system, would go into that. So the CATS system, the total package for the CATS system was about $22,000. The total for the Teams module, which is going to be about, and that's without the training piece. If you have the training piece, it's probably about, the training's the exact same, so I just went with the modules for the hardware and software. So the CATS is about $21,217, something like that. And the Teams is about $8,000 because it's the hardware. We only have to buy the connection. We don't have to buy the software.
So it is 8 plus 5 is 13?
No, we don't have to buy any software with the Teams.
So training again?
Well, training for both of them would be about whatever training we want. So it's $1,000 a day.
Plus the phone.
Plus the phone. So for the CAPS would be, if you want the CAPS system, would be $21,000 plus training, which is $1,000 a day. The Teams would be, what I just said,
eight
plus $1,000 a day.
So
With the Teams, though, it will or will not be able to integrate with the phone?
Yes, it will.
You'll be able to?
But both of them would.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not going to get anything that's not going to integrate with the phone.
You had me confused from it. I was like, whoa.
No, both of them will.
Okay.
I'm sorry. But I have to buy, you know, I didn't want you to think that the Teams module wasn't going to cost anything.
Yeah.
Because I still have to buy hardware for either module. I just don't really have to buy the software.
Yes, ma'am.
Which do you want?
Well, we're bringing it in front of the committee, to be absolute. We wanted to bring it in front of you all first, because I knew we should, because of the ramifications,
yeah,
and discussions we've been having. So I felt, we brought it a couple of times to, and we brought it, head of finance, and...
But which do you want?
I don't care. You're saying the issue with CATS is it's outdated. We need to upgrade it.
Anyways.
That's what we have to do. Upgrade.
That's a very good point. We're at impasse. We have to go to one. We have to either upgrade the current CATS system with. We cannot get the hosted CATS system at all because it does not integrate at all with what we have with Teams.
But you're saying, okay, even if we upgrade the CATS, is there still going to be that labor that you said that
yes,
they have to do manual and all that?
Yes, ma'am.
So which do you want? Well, question.
I know which one I want.
I have a question. Teams. Okay, we're coming down to Teams. And I've heard from lots of people it's not like user friendly. So how would that work in this situation?
The substitute's already using it. That's the odd part. The substitutes are using it.
Why do they want to be using it?
So as far as...
Well, they're using that too.
They're using a part of it.
Now, the CAD system is only used for the teachers.
Okay.
Substitute
to call
system.
Yes.
It's not used for anyone else. Everybody is already on
Teams
absence system. So... The CATS is for the teachers. Mm-hmm. What is really cool, okay, this is a tech. Okay, what's really cool is it takes the PCN, which is like the ID number of the teacher, mm-hmm, matches it to the substitute module, which is kind of cool because then, as an ex-principal, okay, I would have to have my registrar or my attendance clerk go in and sit and put in all the grades. Remember that, Lindy, where they had to go in? Because you couldn't give them access unless you... Somebody in technology, you got there, somebody, the teachers... unless you got the teacher's password.
Never in front of you. No, not in front of
you. I did not hear you say that. I didn't hear that.
But then you'd have to do that to get them to get the grades because you were threatened, you're just not supposed to do that because everything else you get in touch with that teacher's salary now and all that. What it does now, it links them together. You don't have to do that because now the substitute can go right into the assignment, to the grading, and not only that, listen to this. I think Teresa over at payroll will do the jig because instead of going, now it's going to go and it's going to flip right over. Rather than her, she just has to do a verification report rather than say, okay, this sub went. Okay, which teacher did she go? Oh, right here, CE. Oh, then she went over to CMS. Oh, now she went over here. It's going to take this PCN and go.
And you're sure this works the way it's supposed to?
Well, really.
Okay, we don't want to hear about it, okay? You're going to fix it.
Dr. Murphy, I
hear what it's supposed to do, but does it really do it?
It's supposed to eliminate
the
manual entry of data
Dr. Murphy.
System to another.
My choice would be Teams. We are a Teams district. We pay a ton of money to them. The implementation in many areas has been fine. We're working through the finance issues. And if we're going to be a Teams district, we should be a Teams district.
And can I add one thing that might make make you feel a little bit more at ease? The hardware that I purchase
could work within the system. So the hardware that I purchase can work within the system. I'm not putting in a software cost on James. I am putting in a human cost, absolutely. Absolutely, I am doing that. But we're not putting in an additional, like in other words, I'm not putting in a big pot of money of like $20,000 and saying, okay, if it doesn't work, I'm gonna come back and say I've got another pot of money for $20,000. I can take the server, I can take the phone hookup, I can take everything and align it to any other substitute module. That I can, because I still need to have that phone connection, I still need to have that server.
Is it E-rate fundable?
Pardon?
E-rate fundable? No.
Not the phone, I cannot, because of its, but I did, if I can put this in, no, I can't put in the server for E-rate. I can purchase it from for the rest of the telephony that I'm buying, as far as because of the 85% that I'm going to get back from the refund of the $184K, but not, honestly, this is not, because it's not instruction-based. Mm. Even though I know it's teachers and substitutes, but it's
we
not.
We want to do it right. Okay.
Ms. Carrasco, do you want to add something to it?
In talking to my staff, they are, especially Patty, who handles the system, is in agreement that we proceed with Teams.
Okay. Any more comments? No? Okay, then our committee agrees? Okay, our committee agrees to recommend it to the full board.
Teams.
Substitute teacher module.
I don't think it was that, though. It was just
it's
information.
Just information.
Oh, information. No, discussion impossible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this one has you said.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Next agenda item.
Item 3 is community input.
Mr. Joyner.
Come on up, Mr. Joyner. Come on up.
You said all of my
Mr. Joyner, it has to do comments, input from community members on items discussed by the Instruction Personnel Policy Student Services Committee.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, and Dr. Murphy, a couple things I wanted to say, and I'll say them real quick. Item number G.
G.
In this plan that you're looking at doing, is there anything in it that's non-monetary, where you look at things that school districts are doing for their employees that have absolutely nothing to do with money but improve job satisfaction?
Such as?
I don't know. I mean, innovative things that other school districts are doing, or if they're doing anything, because I know for myself, it wasn't always money that made me happy to be doing what I was doing. So sometimes there's some things out there that other school districts come up with, or even employees within a school district would be happy to suggest. I don't know. It's not always more money. Sometimes it's a better disciplinary situation, maybe, or more flexibility on whatever. I'm just saying, I don't know if this survey, or maybe I'm using the wrong word, would have a component that takes in things from comparable school districts that might be of some help to us. Mm-hmm.
I believe it does. Doesn't it, Dr. Murphy, give benefits within that?
Well, but those are still monetary. I can tell you, Mr. Joyner, that the district has set one of the 39 performance objectives and goals that we have this year is the quality of life of CIC employees through surveys would be seen as improving.
Yes, sir. I would.
That certainly is one of our goals.
I was just asking if that was something that was in there. Mm-hmm. Another thing, this is, you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but as a layperson, you guys throw acronyms around this room that the rest of us have absolutely no idea. Is there a dictionary somewhere? I didn't know what a TASB was until I sat here for about 2 hours.
You have a list. it after the meeting.
There's a dictionary for us.
Welcome.
We could make a good list, Mr. Joyner. We could make you a partial list.
Might be a good idea. Okay. You know?
I think that is a superior idea, really, for public use. Mm-hmm. That maybe back on that table, as public comes in, there's a little thing that says...
What everything
is. Yeah, a little index. Yeah.
No, you know what?
That's wonderful.
We all have put it on the agenda.
Yeah.
And I was kind of lost there for a while. The other thing is, on the equity legal center action, I have no objection to that. I just would like Canyon to think maybe that one day we may be one of the rich school districts, so we need to be careful what we ask for.
You're correct.
I had a friend once who had a business, and he had the city write a zoning ordinance so he could only have that business, and then he and his partner busted up, and he tried to open a business. They said, no, you can't open a business. We can only have one like that here. So sometimes we might ought to be careful what we ask for there. And on the
I would counter and tell you that if I was the superintendent of a rich district, I still would be for equity, because it's not fair across the state for the poverty districts.
Yes, sir.
It's just not fair.
For Coastal Guys and Andrews, it would probably.
If I was the superintendent of Andrews, I still would.
They'd probably argue with you.
They'd probably throw me out. But I certainly argue.
Yes, sir. I understand. And then on the limited English proficiency, Mrs. Del Campo, I believe, does a wonderful job. However, I don't believe that system works. When I first heard about bilingual education in Texas, I was ecstatic. I thought we were going to take the English-speaking kids and teach them to speak Spanish, and Spanish-speaking kids and teach them to speak and write English. I thought we'd have biliterate graduates, and boy, I was excited. But now what we have is a situation where we spend a tremendous amount of resources, and we have a little over 10% of our student body that's affected by it. And we have a lot of young people here who I think if we could graduate them as truly biliterate, we would be doing the city, the country, and our students a great service. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to get there. I don't have any idea how to get there. But I think that I know. What did you say, sir? How many years of language to get proficient? What did you say?
5 to 6.
5 years. So we're talking somewhere between 10 and 12 semesters. And what do we offer in Spanish here? 4 semesters? 2? What do we offer? For an English speaking child who wants to learn Spanish in school, they take. Is it 4 semesters?
4 semesters is what the state requires.
4 semesters is what the state requires. So we're basically on the low end, we're 6 semesters shy, and on the high end, we're 8 semesters shy, something along those lines. So teaching them to be truly proficient. And I know I came before the board a couple of years ago and asked if we could do something for the children who were entering Canyatillo beyond the kindergarten area, second grade, where they came in and they were English speaking and wanted to be Spanish speaking, and we don't have anything for those kids. We take a kid who comes here from another country and give that child, as we should, an education, but we give them a competitive advantage over children who are born here who are only monolingual. We don't teach our children, be they have a Spanish surname or not. There are kids with Spanish surnames who don't speak Spanish and don't read it and write it. And I think if we could, as a school district, graduate some students who are truly biliterate, we would have our students be sought after by colleges and universities. Our business community would be, just overjoyed to have these kids. So, roughly, we have 710 children in our school district that we're giving a competitive advantage to over the other 5,000 kids that are here because we aren't making them truly bilingual. That's just an observation that I had. And by and large, I think our Canyon School District does a great job, but I think there's some areas we can improve there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Joyner.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Joyner.
Okay, and
adjournment
by unanimous.
You said not till 10.
All right. Here.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes, ma'am.
Monica was saying that she believes that Europe was discussed previously.
Europe was?
She believes that.
Yeah, I'll find it.
Okay. Sorry.